Good evening or night, wherever you may be, welcome to Fired Up, where we tackle today's political topics at national and state and local levels. Now, our usual host, William Del Pilar's computer, apparently went up in smoke just 10 minutes ago. It must have been an Intel 14th gen CPU, because I think those have been having some problems. But until he gets back, I'm guest hosting in the meanwhile. So today's topics include a preview of the vice presidential debate, which usually, in my opinion, are big snooze fest. But this one seems to promise some sparks. So we're going to get some opinions on that and see what we're looking forward to there. And then after that, we're going to go local here in San Diego discussing a division within the San Diego Republican Party between a couple candidates and our central committee. So hold on tight, because we're going to have some fun tonight. Be fired up. Hey!
Can y'all hear me?
You're back!
Can you hear me?
How'd you like my,
Outstanding. First of
How'd you
all,
like my monologue?
Amy. And you know what's a bummer? I have a great monologue set up and it's, I missed my window. You know, Amy, I don't have all my notes in front of me, but what I want to say to the audience is I gravitate to strong people. I gravitate to people politically who aren't afraid to speak their voice. I don't run for office because, as I told the group before, I'm an angry man, but I have a wife and skeletons in my closet. So to see somebody like Amy do what she does, and based off the topic we're going to talk about, I'm glad we're talking about this topic because I'm not dealing with it directly, but indirectly, I'm dealing with both these candidates, and my research opened up quite, it reminded me of some things. So it's, I'm not sure if I believe in God as fundamentalists do, but I'm like, maybe there's a reason you were supposed to be on the show tonight. And with that, I want you to introduce yourself, Amy. You are a strong woman. You represent everything that to me a woman should be in terms versus what society says. And I am glad you are on our show, and I'm glad you are a conservative. So to everybody, this is Amy. Tell us a bit about yourself.
Aw, thanks. Well, I was never politically involved before 2020, and then that's when I got involved, and I'm the founder of Reopen San Diego, and we fought for the reopening of schools and businesses and churches, and then we went on and we filed a federal lawsuit against Mayor Todd Gloria and the City Council and the City of San Diego because they wanted to fire over 1,000 first responders for not getting the COVID shot. And we prevailed in federal court. We beat back those vaccine mandates. And then I went on to run against Nathan Fletcher for county supervisor in a David versus Goliath race in what's called a D plus 30 district, which means Democrats outnumber Republicans 2.5 times to 1. I did not prevail in that race. And then just a few months later, Nathan Fletcher spectacularly imploded publicly. And then it was game on for the special election. And I did make the runoff for that. And I had $1.5 million of union money spent against me. And I ran for Republican Central Committee, and I was the highest vote getter in District 4. And now I am the chair of Restore San Diego, and I'm a wife and a mom of 2 boys, and I'm just so happy to be here. Thank you for having me.
Well, it's a pleasure to have you. And then we have the other 2 people. I'm kidding. We have Miss Annette Ross here and Mr. G. Mangani. Real quick, you two, we'll start with you, G. Let the audience know about yourself.
Yes, elected official here in the Rancho Santa Fe School Board and conservative ever since I was naturalized in 1997 as an American citizen.
So, gee, you really know your history, man, because of the become of that. You got to know your stuff. Ms. Annette.
Yep. I'm the current president of the Rancho Santa Fe School Board, running for re-election. Don't ask me why. And I'm a glutton for punishment, I guess, and author of the book Where Fairy Tales Go.
Yes, yes. Y'all should buy that book, and y'all should follow both of them, as well as Amy. Amy, we'll pop your URL there, because I'm sorry, not URL, but your profile handle. I was looking at it earlier today, and I'm like, wow, ouch, ooh.
I drop it like it's hot every day.
It reminded me of me a lot, because I have ostracized myself from a lot of people because of my mouth. And we'll get into all of this. So for the audience, we are going to tackle the vice presidential debate first. I think this debate is going to be much, much more exciting than the first one, because I think what you have is a candidate who runs from the topics in Tim Walz, and a candidate who is spectacular on the stump in how he answers the questions, how he's able to handle the media and people. That's a rarity with Republicans, you know. And before we get to that, it just hit me. Plus 30, you said, in your district. That just a few years ago, that was a Republican district. It shows how quickly the tides have turned. And we'll talk a little bit about that when we get to that topic. But, wow, that's incredible. Okay, so first of all, for the debate is October 1st. It's at 9 p.m. It's in New York City. Nora O'Donnell and Margaret Brennan from CBS News, I believe, are moderating it. It's a 90-minute debate. There's no live audience. And let's talk potential attack strategies. First of all, Vance's approach. I'm looking towards him aggressively challenging Walz's record. I don't think he's going to look for a viral moment, but his just natural ability may create one. He'll obviously focus on how far left Walz is. He'll bring up the economic issues if the moderators don't. And he'll highlight Harris's flip-flops. Walz, on the other hand, I think he's going to go after Vance's old tweets, his old controversial statements. He may try to talk about how he's been a governor, how he'll lead. And then he's going to paint Vance as an extension of Trump's policies. And we all know he's going to deflect the economic issues. So to the group here, and we'll start with Amy first. What's the best way for Vance to go after Walz? And how might Walz hit back at him? Because I think it's going to be a slugfest one way. So Walz is going to have to figure out how to fight back. So how do you think Vance will go after him, and how will Walz counter?
Well, I think we can all relate, being here in California. We've been slow boiling frogs under the far left extremist policies that we're now living under. And I think the best possible way Vance can get through to the average American is just paint Walz as the far left extremist that he is. Because the fact of the matter is, that's exactly what they're going to do to J.D. Vance. They're going to take a guy who is a Marine veteran, and he's the average American hillbilly elegy, right? They're going to try to make him as this far right MAGA white supremacist, right? And so I say, you know what? If they're going to call you names, you got to go right back at them. So, and it's the truth. Walz is a far left socialist Marxist extremist.
I think the hillbilly outlook, to me, that's one of those things that's going to backfire, because the working class American, we may not be hillbillies, but we all know hillbillies, and we know that they're no different than any other hardworking person. So, Miss Annette, which attacks do you think will stick with voters? I mean, let's assume certain attacks, as Amy said. If there's any kind of attack, which type do you think is going to stick with the voters? Him going after Walz's stolen valor, Walz going after his cat comments. I mean, we know there's a lot of fuel there. Do you think there's something in your mind that's going to stick out?
Well, you know what I did today, William, was I went and I looked at all of the videos that I could find on Tim Walz interviews. And no, this is true. And on J.D. Vance. So you're like, don't you have anything better to do in the day than that? I guess not. I could not find a single interview with Tim Walz that was over 8 minutes long. Found plenty with J.D. Not one that was over 8 minutes in the last year, which I thought was really interesting. So I think one of the things he said that bothered me was he criticized J.D. Vance about living in a small town. He said he really doesn't have any idea what it's like to live in a small town. I grew up in a small town with 400 people, and it was nothing like what he describes. He's this sort of He's not really a self-made person. He's had all these advantages and all these privileges. I don't think that's going to fly. I think where JD might have him, because I saw JD, really interesting interview with him. He was criticizing Tim on the healthcare. I don't think this was brought up enough, because he made a really good point about what's happening with the illegal immigration and why people aren't getting their access to healthcare that they deserve and that they need. Because we are paying for so many people who have no sort of insurance. We're paying for them to come to the emergency rooms. We're paying for them for free healthcare. And so I don't want to say average people, but yes, the people in middle America, the people in the, Midwestern states. And that was one of the complaints that people were saying in this little interview that I saw with JD, was that, hey, I'm not getting healthcare anymore. When I go to the emergency room, it's so expensive. I can't afford it. And his response, which was the first thing he said, it was about immigration, I thought was really, really strong response. And I thought it made a lot of sense. And I thought a lot of people resonated with that. I wish they'd bring that up more, because we all have to go to the doctor. We all have emergencies. And it's scary to think you can't get the care that you need when you need it for yourself or for your children.
I know. I agree. Annette, whenever I smile, you always come back, oh, no, I'm serious. So I'm not chuckling at you. It's something else. So I feel guilty. Like, oh, gosh, don't take it the wrong way. I was just chuckling there.
I'm looking at you, yes.
So, G, hopping on what Annette said, first of all, do you think the healthcare topic is something that can be made into an issue? And go ahead and give us your take on what's the best way for Vance to go after Walz.
No, I mean, you're going to have multiple lines of attack to win the debate, right? So the healthcare part of it is going to be important. But I think painting Walz as a left-wing liberal, like Amy said, is going to be important as well, because there's plenty of material there. And the fact that he acts like Homer Simpson, I mean, there's a lot of material there too. But, you know, I don't think he's going to go after him personally, except for maybe the stolen dollar thing. Here's Walz's, I think, biggest weakness, and it's one of the top issues in the campaign, and it's about the economy. Now, when Walz first got into the race, right, when Kamala asked him to be her VP candidate, there were articles about how he doesn't own any real estate, he doesn't own any 401ks, he doesn't have a brokerage account. And I'm sitting there going, okay, this guy wants to be a heartbeat away from running our economy? Like, he can't even run his own personal economy. Whereas you look at Vance, right? And he came from poverty and worked his way up and is a very successful, articulate person. So I think the contrast right there is really big. Like, J.D. Vance knows how to make money and be prosperous, and he wouldn't know how to do that for the American people. Whereas Walz, if he can't do it for himself, how is he going to do it for us, right? So I think that would be the biggest line of attack right there.
Wow, I gotta admit, I hadn't even considered that. I think Vance is going to want to stay on the economy. That's Trump's greatest strength, healthcare being one of it. I think the kitchen, what's that term? The kitchen,
kitchen table
politics. Yeah. That is what's on everybody's mind. You know, James Carville is immortalized for "it's the economy, stupid." And even when they don't talk about it, it's the economy, stupid. But that said, the fun part is always the mudslinging in these debates. You know, is there anybody here who disagrees? To me, it's like such low hanging fruit, because Vance served. He's a combat veteran. And then you have Walz's integrity regarding his military service, you know, saying he was a command sergeant major when he actually retired in EA. You know, he's your classic corrupt politician. And they can use the example of he abandoned his unit by retiring after they were given orders to deploy. And I think Walz will come back again with the cat. And he may come back to G's favorite story there, the Haitians out of Springfield, you know, to mock him, you know. So, Amy, what's your thought? I mean, I think Vance should stick to the economy, but it's such low-hanging. I mean, he's so intelligent. He's so quick-witted. It's just such low-hanging fruit to destroy Walz with the mudslinging. But do you think that would be a smart move?
I think you have to throw everything and the kitchen sink at a debate. This is going to be the one shot where people are going to have a chance. I mean, a lot of people don't even know who Walt is, right? So as a candidate, what you have to do is you have to brand your opponent and also brand yourself. So, yeah, mudsling away, I say.
Miss Annette, you're always the serious one in terms of, like, it's the issues, it's this. So what's your thought on what Amy and I think? Mudsling.
Well, you know, I have a disdain for that for sure, but I don't like dishonesty. So I think that it is potentially realistic to think that he might bring up that he was dishonest about his service. I don't know. I was like, again, I was watching these videos today with J.D. Vance, and I was thinking to myself, wow, he really is very, he holds himself with a decorum, and I like that. I like that he keeps his composure. I like that he seems respectful, but he gets fired about the issues because he's very intelligent, so he's able to talk, and he's able to get his complete sentences out there. Tim Walz is not as articulate. So I don't think there's going to be a lot of that happening on Tuesday night. I don't think so.
All right. Okay, Mr. Econ, gee, what's your take? Is the low-hanging fruit just too low, or should he go economically here?
No, he will go to the stolen valor thing. I think he's going to at least reference it, but I think he's not going to go beyond that. I mean, I think something we have in Vance, right, is an Obama-like articulation of his ideas, right? And that's very rare, unfortunately, on the Republican side, and I hate to say that, but the reason why Romney gave Obama a run for his money is because Romney was very articulate with what he was saying. So J.D. Vance has that, and I think he's just got to use that. He's got to rise above. I think it's okay to do the swift voting thing, but then beyond that, he's got to just stick to the issues.
I can't argue that. There's so much out there. I don't want to put you guys on the spot, but for me, it's the stolen valor. But there's the command sergeant major where he retired as an E-8. He said he was E-9. He said he had PTSD to a family. You know, when we came back from Afghanistan, it reminds me of the guy from Connecticut or Vermont that fought in Vietnam. You know, I think the PTSD and the stolen valor are his two best bets. I'm putting you guys on the spot, and I apologize, but out of the low-hanging fruit there with the military, there's so much. Which one should he key in on? I'm just having fun here with this one. But Amy, is there a specific military issue that he should just key in on Walt to destroy him?
Absolutely. It's like drill down on the military issue. That's something that so many Americans identify with, because they themselves have served in the military or have a loved one who has.
Okay. But is there, yeah. Okay, let me ask you this with it. So should he go after the stolen valor, the PTSD lie, or he said he was a command sergeant major lie? Which one's the most devastating out of those to go after?
Jeff, I would not go after the PTSD thing. I don't really think that's something that most Americans are concerned about. They might actually identify with him oddly over the PTSD thing. So I would say going after the stolen valor and also the rank.
Gotcha. All right, guys, that wasn't the best question. I apologize. As a military guy, I'm like, man, I'm like a kid at a candy store with all the military lies and issues with Walt. So let's move on a bit there. I apologize go ahead.
One thing about these guys, though, I wonder what Amy and G think and what you think as well. Like, I don't find either one of them to be all that charismatic. Do you?
You are correct. Neither one is charismatic. But the thing – no, actually, they both are in their own way. Tim Walz is like a clown. When I see him, I see a clown. And when I see him, I'm like, oh, my God, those people I argue with are right. Morons can make it high in the politics, you know? And when I see Tim, and when I see Vance, I see an intellectual, but he's so quick thinking. He's so quick on his feet. He doesn't need to be charismatic because you get engrossed in his answer, you know? Because he's so quick about it, you marvel at the fact, holy mackerel, he's taking that leftist on and winning. You know, that's my take on it. What's yours, Gene? Then we'll go to Amy on that.
Well, Vance's problem, and I agree with that, Vance's problem is, and kind of my problem, I start over-explaining things, and people start to doze off. And I remember Big John last week's like, move on with the segment. He's talking too, like this is way too dry. So that's Vance's problem. And again, Waltz's problem is the Homer Simpson type.
Yes.
You know, body language is bizarre.
What do you think, Amy? Do you think they're both uncharismatic? I mean, what's your thought? You're a strong woman, as I said. So as a strong woman, when you see these two fools, what do you think?
You know, I think about, you know, like when you're getting married and brides, when they're picking out their bridesmaid, they're, you know, if one of their friends is like Miss America, maybe they're not going to make them the maid of honor. I'm just saying there's a reason why these two were picked as VPs. You know, they're not exactly burning as bright as Harris or Trump. So, yeah, it's VPs.
You cannot argue that point. All right. So what's going to be different from this debate, from the last two debates? The hot mic. And then we'll go back to you. Do you think there we're going to have some hot mic issues in this debate in terms of Kamala wanted the open mic so she knew Trump would be able to play the victim mentality. I kind of don't see how that can happen. So I'm not sure how the hot mics play into it. I'm sorry, how the open mics play into it. But is there a chance for a hot mic moment here?
I don't think so as much. I mean, she was just hoping that she would catch Trump on something that was, but no, I don't see that in the same way. I mean, both these guys, they have their points. They're on opposite ends of the spectrum for sure. But honestly, I find them both to be fairly respectful.
Yeah, I guess I could see that in terms of, I think Waltz would be more respectful because he's scared at, you know, kind of like the poor little kid and the bully picking on him, you know? Gee, your thought there. No charisma with these guys or what? I'm sorry. The hot mic moment.
No. I think it's going to be like the VP debates in the 1980s. It's just like, okay, you tune in, you fall asleep. I was like 12 at the time. I'm like, Dad, why are you watching this? I mean, I think it's going to be something similar to that. good one there. but there might be a spark here or there. And I think Waltz is going to try to do that, in my opinion. But JD might have a good comeback. But JD, I think, can hold his tongue and then have a nice comeback when it's his turn to speak. So, yeah.
You know, so, okay, so real quick, when I saw this image, I was like, that's got to be AI. That could be his daughter, you know? And yes, I'm making fun of Tim Waltz. This is a conservative talk show. It's hard for us military guys to take him seriously. All right, but let's get serious here real quick, though. There are stakes for this candidate. I think this is the first VP debate that has high stakes. Trump is older. You know, when I look at Trump, you know, he's older, you know, J.D. Vance could become VP. And so I look at it from that perspective a bit. So Vance has the opportunity, I believe, to, I don't want to say revive. That's a term I used in my notes, but to Trump kind of, I thought, underperform. He didn't lose the last debate, but he didn't get shellacked like they tried to make it. But I think it's a chance for him to really uplift their campaign, a chance for Vance to come in and improve that public image. And I just think Vance, like you said, G, he can't be dry. He's got to come in hard hitting with these economic issues. That's a stake I see on the table here. Amy, what do you see in terms of the stakes here in terms on the serious side of the political battle here?
Well, you know what they say about October surprises, right? And it's almost October, and this debate happens on October 1st. So I'm ready. I'm ready for some October surprises to be dropped at this VP debate and hoping for something insanely viral to come out of it.
Gee, your thought. What's at stake here for Vance? Well, real quick, on Waltz, I don't know why I put in my notes, you know, likable persona, because that's how the media's tried to portray him. So he'll probably try to keep going with that. But the stakes for them is their economic plan could be exposed. You know, they don't talk about that. So there are stakes on two sides. One, I think, is perception. The other one is hiding the truth. How do you see it?
Well, what I think is going on, and this is just a big hunch of mine, I'm wondering how Kamala is going out there and repeating the dreams and aspirations and just keep saying the whole thing, holistic, holistic, holistic. Like, who's advising her? And that, I started to think maybe nobody's advising her. I don't think these Democrat party leaders want her to win, right?
Amy, so now, that's G's whole storyline for the last month.
And I don't think Gavin Newsom wants her to win. Gavin Newsom in December wants to start planning his 2028 run. So he doesn't want her to win. So he's not out there campaigning. So I say all that because I don't think Walz knows what his presidential candidate's economic plan is, right? There's a $25,000 here and the $50,000 here and the dreams, hopes, aspirations, and opportunity economy. And Vance, I think, will go in there and say, you don't even know what it is, right? And I think there's a lot more at stake for the Harris campaign because if Vance can show that Tim can't even articulate it, or he articulates something but it contradicts Harris, there's going to be a lot to lose right there, right? On the Trump side, I don't think there's much to lose because people are voting for Trump. They're not voting for Vance. On Kamala's side, they're voting either against Trump or they're just looking for some semblance of consistency within their policy, of which they have very little.
I don't know, G. I think in this case, some of the independent voters, because, you know, we know nobody denies Trump is crass, you know. So I think there's some independent voters who are going to look at that, his crassness. Oh, he's just dumb, ignorant, a bully. I think it's a chance for Vance, for them to see Vance go, whoa, that guy's actually pretty smart, knows what he's talking about. I'm not saying Trump isn't, but I'm saying dynamics of personalities. I mean, that's just how I see it from that perspective. But Annette, Vance needs – we talked about this in a different format with the younger voters a couple podcasts ago. Vance does need to appeal to younger voters, you know, and as G said, Walz has got to deal with the issues in terms of flip-flops and that. But let's focus on Vance with the younger voters. Mm-hmm. How does he get to them? This is an opportunity. Remember, Trump has his reputation. Vance is the newer generation.
I do think that that's going to be a little bit of a challenge, only because a few different times, you know, with the sound bites that have come out about him, they make it seem like he wants all women to be at home, you know, having children, not having choices, maybe just, you know, now, if you listen to him in a whole paragraph, he would say, children are the future. Children matter. We should be supporting families so they can have children. But the sound bites cut him up, and I think the younger people feel like he's taking away our choices. He has a certain ideal and value that he wants to impose upon us. And really, we should be able to have our full careers or find our meaning. Or, you know, he's able to break some of this terrible indoctrination about what is meaningful in life and what gives people purpose. That's what has happened to our children now. They have a different story about that. And actually, it's led them down a path of self-destruction and unhappiness and mental health problems. This new sort of idea about what really brings happiness and like real inner joy. So that's a disaster. And J.D. Vance knows that. But the way he's cut up about how he talks about it, it makes, I think, the younger generation a little bit scared. I think there's hope that if he can get his entire message out and they get to hear the whole thing, they'll easily see that he's just propping up the family and the children, that children are the future, that family and family support is everything, and that's something you can lean on and you can lean on for a lifetime, that love is a value that we should have, and it starts within the family and it starts with our neighbors. But I think that part of it is tricky because that is the one thing that I feel like I saw on the other side with Tim Walz. The one thing he's going to harp on is, I think, that idea that J.D. Vance has put out there, and this whole everyone's like alone with their cats. You know, that's true, right? I mean, I saw some people holding cats and like making fun of J.D. Vance, some ladies. So maybe there was only three, but I did see a couple people responding to that. So he's going to have to break that apart, and he's going to have to maybe say it in a new way.
Yeah, no, I get it. And again, I wasn't laughing at you. When you said the older ladies holding cats, I'm thinking it's better the older ladies than the Springfield constituents. And I'm kidding, people. I'm kidding. You are a mother, a woman who believes in family values. You were in a race in a D plus 30, I think you said. In a way, the youth vote is kind of like a D plus 30 for us Republicans. If you were on his staff, Amy, how would you tell him to speak on or towards the youth?
Well, running here in San Diego, one of the things that I found was very interesting is I was running for supervisor, yet my opponent made it about Trump and abortion. Even though Trump wasn't on the ballot and abortion wasn't even on the ballot. In fact, it had already passed Prop 1. It's now a constitutional amendment in California. So here's what they're going to do is in this campaign, abortion is going to be like the main topic right now. And so when you're talking to a younger audience, that's going to be very, very tough. So, you know, if I were running for president of the United States, I would speak to the younger generation and how they've been robbed, really, under Biden.
Oh, that's a good point. That's a very good point.
They have been robbed of the possibility of owning a home. They've been robbed by colleges that have overcharged them for an education that they can't even get a comparable job out of, that when they walk out of a grocery store now compared to 4 years ago, in one bag, this happened to me last week, I paid $100 for one bag of groceries at Vons. It wasn't even Whole Foods. It wasn't even like any tofu cheese in there or anything, right? So I would speak to the economic reality and I would speak to, are you better off, you know, four years ago or now? And I mean,
that's a good answer. Hitting them economically.
We were better off 4 years ago.
And I want to put you back on that because I think that's a great answer. And Kamala and Biden's approach has been, well, we'll pay your student loans off for you. Instead of, let's find you better jobs. So you make enough where you can easily pay that. And it's just like another, you know, water bill or whatever to you. So that, I mean, approaching it like that would be more effective. I think that would speak to a lot of our youth.
Well, you know, the stakes for each campaign, you know, what you said there, Amy, then G, all three of you, the stakes is to get the perception for Vance to be seen differently, because you're right. He's got all these tropes they've used on him because of cut up video or taking his comments. But as the politician, you got to be aware of that. And there was a time it looked like he just didn't care, you know, but, no, that's a great approach. You would think these kids were into family considering most of them are living in their parents' basements. Okay. So gee, let's go with you.
Amy, can I say really quick, Amy makes such a good point. Amy, that was so well said, but most of the kids, because, you know, I have kids now that are out of the house and living on their own or trying to. So my peer group of parents, they're also supporting their kids. And they're out of college and they have jobs. Because they're not, like, to your point, they're not making it.
Yeah, you know, the cost of college is so – I'm sorry, go ahead, Amy.
Yeah. Oh, go ahead.
So I said the cost of college – is so astronomical. When I was going through that, I was a returning student, meaning I went and partied my way my first year in college and joined the military, but I went back. And it was right about that point in the mid to late 90s where you saw the transition from being 4 years to it was taking 5 years. And I always thought it was, man, what is it? You're dumb. But no, they were adding units, you know, because it happened to me. All of a sudden, I needed more units to graduate. So, and that's just more money for the college. And you're right. It's messaging. What you guys were saying about, what you were saying about the jobs, you know, we're going to pay it off. We're going to pay it off. The downside is most kids are okay with it, but there is a core and the right decision for anybody is, let's open the economy up so you have jobs that can pay this off. But I also believe it's just going to get worse. On a side note, I think it's just going to get worse with college, because as long as the government will back those loans, these schools are just going to keep jacking that price off. That's where our producer, Big John Libertarian, I'm 100% on board. You got to let the free market work its way with college loans, make it more competitive, and the price of universities will come down. And that's a disgrace. All right. So, practicing, preparation strategies, you know, I'm not concerned with Vance, but I got to be honest. I don't have much respect for Pete Buttigieg. What does he actually bring to the table for Tim Walz? To me, it's one clown helping another clown out. But that said, Pete did well enough to land himself a cabinet position. So obviously I'm looking at it wrong. How does Pete Buttigieg help Tim Walz, Annette?
Wait, do you think because he's in a cabinet position that you're looking at it wrong?
No, I'm just trying to be fair to Pete.
Oh, okay. I think that's not how he got in that position at all. And he's
don't
been
talk
so, just, he's been so bad in his position. Gosh, let someone else start with that. I got to really think on that one there.
Well, I have a thought.
Okay.
I think, well, Pete Buttigieg is in Indiana, right?
Yes.
So he's in a very conservative area. He's very articulate. So I think there's a lot of, I mean, that's one state over, I think, from Ohio. So just west of Ohio. So I think that's why he was chosen. He could emulate a lot of, or he knows a lot of J.D. Vance type people, or probably grew up around them, that, he's probably the best person to emulate him.
I'm at a loss. How about you, Amy? Any thoughts? And if you guys don't have thoughts on this, I ask, because it just seems out there, like Pete Buttigieg. You'd want somebody with experience, somebody who do that. Amy, you have any thoughts on this?
Okay, I'm just going to go completely cynical. I thought Kamala Harris did way too well in the presidential debate. I do believe that she was given the questions beforehand, because her performance there does not match the Kamala Harris that we see everywhere else in every other interview, where she's just off on tangents and talking about coconut trees. So I'll tell you what, Buttigieg, maybe he's going to help get Walz the questions before the VP debate. I'm not taking that off the table as a possibility. I think that they're capable of doing that.
I'm not going to lie. There's no doubt in my mind. I have no proof, nothing, but when Donna Brazile admitted that Hillary Clinton got the questions, and you're right. I don't know if it was because Kamala had the questions at the previous debate as much as Trump was really fighting three people on that stage. David Muir, he was like the big brother. He's like that video. There's a video out there of this blind kid getting bullied, and this kid, the blind kid's friend out of nowhere knocks the bully out. You know, that's what David Muir was for Kamala against Trump. So, but yeah, I think there's a good chance that they're going to have the questions. And that's why I'm so happy. I guess I didn't realize how much I admire J.D. Vance, and it's because where he came from. You know, my mother and my dad, they came from nothing, but J.D. Vance came from nothing too, but he had this intellect. So you hear all these great success stories, but you rarely hear them with people of the intellect that he has. So maybe I admire him that much. So I think he'll be able to counter, even if Walz has the questions. And I got to be honest, I joke a lot. But to get at that level, to become a governor, maybe you're not the smartest guy, but you're very ruthless, conniving, and you know how to get to a certain point. So maybe so Walz isn't as dumb, but I just don't think he's on the intellectual level of a J.D. Vance. And I guess maybe that's why I don't see Pete Buttigieg helping him at all. I see just two clowns. So I'm sorry. I just wanted to toss that in when I saw Pete Buttigieg. and I'm saying his name wrong because I've only said it one way since he came on the scene, and I can't say it that way now. All right. So we're at about 45 minutes. I don't want to there's so much more to talk about, but I think we talked about most of the good stuff. Let's do one final question on this debate here. We know this is the last big debate before the election. And most people agree with you. It's not going to change much minds. But on the serious note, what's one thing Vance can say or do that might actually get some fence sitters to vote for him? What do you think he needs to actually say or do? The one thing you would sit there and say, you make sure you say or do this, and that can get us some of these independent voters. Gee.
Yeah, I think the border is an issue because of two reasons, crime and economy, right? So he's got to really nail that economy piece down. One, talk about the Trump tax cuts expiring next year and that Trump and him will renew them or even make them lower. So I think that if he can hammer that home and talk about just a renaissance, right? Because I think we're going into a recession right now. There's going to be an economic renaissance that everyone will experience. New jobs, better jobs, more manufacturing. If he nails that, I think people will say, let's go back to the 2016-2020 era because I had a lot more money. My grocery prices, like Amy was talking about, was lower. And we were all doing better then. And right now, I mean, I just bought orange juice yesterday and it was $4 for 46 ounces, right? 46 ounces. It used to be 59. Yeah. And I think 15 years ago, it used to be 64 ounces. So I'm paying more for less. So there's like inflation and shrinkflation happening at the same time. So if he can really talk about those types of issues and really hammer home that Walz and Harris don't really have a plan for it, I think that will really set the Trump team up for success this next month.
Ms. Annette, what's the one thing you would tell the Trump campaign the Vance team that you got to bring this up or you got to get this point across?
I think that she's right about the importance of the economy, but I think that those people that are already thinking about the economy are already on Trump's team. So I'm with J.D. Vance. I'm more worried about the perception of him and with women. I think that I only say that because the women that I talk to, they have a lot of fears about him. And I think there's a perception about him that's really maybe not accurate. So I do think they're going to, I think Amy's absolutely right. I mean, they're going to drive home this abortion issue. They're going to scare everybody into thinking that we're going back to some sort of Puritan time. And so I think that would be something that I would try to talk to him about, or I think that he could try to change the perception of him about women and their place in our society.
No, that's a phenomenal answer. I hadn't even thought. I mean, we all know that issue hadn't even crossed my mind. Miss Amy, what are your thoughts if you were to tell the Vance campaign you got to do this?
So, as somebody who ran against a far-left socialist, and it's very difficult to run against far-left socialists because they promise you free everything. Yeah. How do you run against somebody who's promising free college, free houses, oh, and rent control, and oh, we're going to do price controls? So I think the spin is to go to the positive and to talk about prosperity. That's the message.
You know,
prosperity.
You're right. In fact, G was talking about a couple of episodes ago about, you know, he needs to talk about the college loans. And I'm like, no, G. I was like, that's way wrong. She's just going to offer free college. I mean, free school loans. You know, you're right. That's what's sad. That's why I get so angry. And we have two school board members and you fought hard for the schools too. Why I think we've lost the education battle because if we could just teach our kids to critically think, they would go, well, who's going to pay for all that, you know, thinking, you know, and it wouldn't buy the rich, you know, you trumped me. I was going to say two things. He needs to make sure he figure out a way to talk about Israel and Hamas because both votes are out there. The Democrats are losing both Jews and Muslims. And then I was going to say, talk about the economy and kitchen table verbiage like fuel costs and things like that. We're going to drill, baby, drill. But I think at the end of the day, Annette, you have the answer there. He's got it. And that's piggybacking off of Amy with the abortion issue. It's a Republican Party problem. But we have this election, so it's an advanced Trump problem. He needs to answer and work a framework to answer the woman issue and the abortion issue. Because, Amy, you said, hey, this time they said that it was abortion. No, it's abortion every cycle. And to make it even worse, it's successful every cycle. You know, I mean, Annette, when she gives us her examples of her daughter, the same message from her daughters. And I don't think, and I'm going to repeat this because I truly believe this, it's abortion is the issue. But I think the underlying subconscious issue is when a woman hears that, she thinks they're taking away my right. You know, and that goes across the board to everything. And I think that's a powerful weapon. And Democrats have mastered that. You know,
can I ask you a question about prosperity? Amy, when you said that, like, what do we do in a society now that is getting used to things being for free? How do we sell them the prosperity message? Like, how does that resonate, like, with the younger, especially, who, like, they're like, yeah, pay off my loans. Yeah, I would love to have, you know what I mean, as much free stuff. How do we get them to be more, have autonomy for their lives and believe that the American dream is something that they can go after?
You know, I would just really encourage, like, every single young person to whip out their paycheck and to look at how much the federal and state government is taking. And then when the federal and state government tell you that they're giving you something for free, they're laughing in your face. It's coming from you. It's not coming from the uber rich. It is coming from the working class 20-year-old, and it is robbing their future. And so that's the point that I would bring home, is that all this stuff, free stuff, they are laughing at you. They are mocking you. It is not free. You're paying for it.
That is true. That is true. G, I'll give you the last word on this topic. Anything in this debate you would advise or say you think is going to happen? What's your final take on this?
I think... I mean, I'm just going to answer. I mean, I gave my thought about the economy and stuff. I'm going to answer the next question. Another way to do that, to reach the youth and say, you get what you pay for, right? If you're not going to pay for it, well, you are, like Amy said, but, you know, directly you're not paying for it. You pay for it through your taxes. The quality is just bad, right? And I used the example of public restrooms last week, right? Would you rather use a public restroom or the one at Starbucks? When we're talking about the project, right, public housing or whatnot. So I think it's going to take a generation or two for them to realize that, and by then they'll be in their midlife. But, you know, those who want free things, I think they're just going to continue wanting free things. So, yeah.
You know, it's our producer could probably tell us the quote, but there have been many philosophers that said once the public believes they can get something for free, and once a politician sees that as being a successful campaign tactic, that's the beginning of the end for that country. And I believe we've been – when I say tipping point, people try to put it in years that are too short. I look at it in generations. We're at a tipping point, and it started with Obama, but the seeds were planted with the Clinton and Bush in terms of how they were more for their donors, and Bush even more. But it started with Obama, the tipping point of free, free, free. And I fear that, having been born and raised in a third world country as an American citizen, I was excluded for that. But seeing that, seeing dictators will promise the world until they get in power. And that's what's depressing, is you think you're getting it free, but at the end of the day, you're going to suffer as much as everybody else will. So, all right. Great debate on the upcoming debate. And that's going to be a fun debate, so we all look forward to that. Let's get into a very serious topic. And Amy, I was telling the guy and the gal that I think you we're going to have people watching this portion of the podcast, because I think what you did has kind of opened the door. Obviously, the San Diego Republican, we're going to talk about the San Diego Republican party here, people, to the audience. And they're at war right now, and it's a war that I think should be happening. I got involved in the San Diego Republican Party in 2015. I was seen as all the check marks, you know, a couple of grassroots activists that were well embedded in the party. They would tell me, hey, you have a future, you have this or that, a Latino group. the beginning of the end for me began when the Latino group said, William, you need to think about moving from Valley Center. That way they can groom you, nurture you. And I'm like, are you high? I'm like, I'm not going to move. First of all, I'll sell my house and I won't be able to afford another house. You know, I'm thinking in my head. But, you know, when you voice your opinion, it becomes tough. But when you're a party that is broke or has exponentially lost race after race after race since 2010 and earlier, you're a weak party. So when somebody who is strong, who has no fear and has a platform and comes along, it's easy for them to get in there and take that party over. And I'm not saying that in a good or bad way. I immediately noticed this individual, and we're going to be talking about the war between the party, the San Diego Republican Party, and Carl DeMaio. When I met Carl, and I liked Carl, you know, I'm being fully transparent. I loved him. Why? Because he was like you, Amy, from the grassroots fighter perspective. I mean, you hear him talk, and you're like, yeah, we got somebody who's going to fight. And he was able to rally the grassroots, and he's charismatic, has his personality. But more important, I saw the power of his radio show. I'm like, oh my God, this guy's going to go far. Why? Because at the time, AM radio was still strong in political talk. Podcasts are starting to eclipse that, but at the time in 2015, it was still AM radio. And I saw him build that base up. And then I never asked, but I'm like, man, it seems like Tony Kovarik is in his pocket. You know, he's like a strong ally. They were always together. And then when Paula came around, Tony Kovarik, people to the audience, was the San Diego Republican chair. And then Paula Witzel was his handpicked replacement. And from day one, I thought she was allied with Carl DeMaio. And it turns out I was right, you know, and I want to get your thoughts. My thoughts began formulating when I got actively involved in 2015. Amy, I'm going to save you for this with the last. But G and Annette, what are your experiences in terms of the Republican Party, its strength, its weaknesses, having somebody who's a strong a grassroots guy, very dominant? And I say that because it doesn't matter what we think of him personally or what others think of him personally. The guy's a powerhouse. He is, to me, California's strongest conservative activist, good or bad. There's no other activist who brings things to the table like he does. Annette, first you and your thoughts about this, and then we'll go to G.
Are you asking me my thoughts about where the Republican Party is at?
In San Diego, in terms of an outsider like him being as a non-party figure, meaning he has no official ties to the party except like you, I, or Amy. We're Republicans, and that's our party. He doesn't hold a position there, but yet he literally controlled that party, you know, for years.
I mean, can G start? I got to think about this for a second. I've been thinking about it, but can I say how I think the Republican Party – let G start.
Yeah, and G, for you, we came up at about the same time.
No, I went to my first Central Committee meeting right after Romney lost. So it was November or December of 2012, and I met Tony at that time, and there were maybe 30 people in the room. I mean, there weren't a lot of people there. And fast forward 4 years, there was 1,000 people in the room. I mean, there was tremendous growth in activism just by the grassroots. And a lot of that, you know, I attribute to Tony's work. And I, you know, there was, it was almost like a sense of, okay, we're coming together. And that was the year Trump won. So, and I believe that we were one of the most successful fundraising local parties in the nation, or maybe that was California. But so my experience has been great. I have not been so involved lately because I've been involved in my office that I'm holding, and there's only so much free time that I have to go around. But that's my thoughts right now. I haven't interfaced with Carl much, so I don't have any personal experience with him.
G's right, Annette and Amy. I don't know if you two were around back then, but yeah, I remember it was 800. It wasn't quite 800, 900, and they hit 1,000 at some of these monthly meetings. But I'll be frank. I did not attribute that to the San Diego Republican Party in its entirety. The Trump movement was everywhere, walkers everywhere. Out of those 800,000, 900,000, 600 of them were Trump supporters. They were there because of Trump, not because of the party. So I'm not trying to diminish what Tony did as much as that's kind of how I saw it, and I think it's kind of played out that way. You know, so Annette, and if you don't really have heavy thoughts on this, that's fine because you weren't involved back then. I'm just trying to set the table here.
No, I mean, no, I really appreciate that and you saying that because I just got involved in San Diego politics when I ran in 2020 and someone asked me to run and I said, yes, I would. And so in that time, it's been a huge learning curve for me and huge getting to know all of these people, Tony being one of them, who was honestly incredibly great to me and very supportive. I mean, this is a person who barely knew me at all and answered all of my text messages if I would just have a question for him. Sorry about that. And so, but I mean, I know it's Clover. What are you going to do? Clover's like the other member of the show. But what I would like to say, though, is the party is interesting because they're supportive and then they're not supportive. I guess that's what's weird to me about the party. I think I thought that I would have more support than I have. So there are times when I feel very alone, even though I am, you know, the Republicans have endorsed me again. However, like maybe I have a couple people that I could really, you know, count on if I needed something. Amy, actually, you're one of them, and we're just getting to know each other because we met. I mean, like I could call you. I do call you. You would answer any text I sent to you as well. But it's a strange. It doesn't feel like a cohesive group to me. I guess I would just say that, William. It doesn't feel like we're really strong together and that we have each other's backs the way I would think it would be that because we're all conservatives and we're all saying that that's, you know, that's what we're trying to put forth for the American right. people and for our local.
Actually, that you said something that kind of triggered this. So for Amy, Carl has the power to mobilize grassroots people. You see it with the office. You just see it. To me, that was his way in. What's your take on it in terms of, I mean, do you agree or not that he was controlling that party for a while? You
know? He is a fake grassroots activist. He is very good at raising money off of old people who give their money to reform California. And I would just say, what has he done? Name one thing that he's done. He sends 5, 6, 7 emails a week saying, we've got to fight to keep Proposition 13. And we've got to recall this person and recall that person. There have been so many times when he has raised money specifically for recalls that never happened. Instead, he collected a lot of money. And I'll just say this. There's an elected official right here in San Diego who told me this, and it stuck with me. He said, Amy, if I had cancer, Carl DeMaio would find a way to fundraise off my cancer and keep the money for himself.
You know, Amy, you bring up a good point, because this is a tough show for me because Carl can do more for my district right now than Andrew can. That's just the bottom line in how I see it. But it's tough because I kind of agree with you. There's a couple of things I noticed. I'm like, he's got those elderly women. And I don't say elderly is in a bad way, just these older women. They're all down at his Escondido office, always working. It's not that I disagree.
Writing envelopes to people asking for money.
Yes, and you're right. I used to always, there's an endorsed candidate of Carl's who disagrees with him. And he's a fundamentalist, and he's always preaching. And I just finally pulled my hair out and I just said, you're a hypocrite. I go, I love you to death, but you're a hypocrite. You don't agree with him, but since he endorsed you, you won't speak out and do the right thing. And I give this guy cojones. He goes, yep, you're right. You know, but yet he judges everybody else. And that's what, and I'm not talking about Carl. I'm talking about this individual. And I'm like, well, that's why our party's weak. At the end of the day, your own self-serving political career was more important than doing the right thing, which is what you tell everybody to do. Because I truly believe he consolidated power for himself because of his radio show. Tony Kovarik was on his side. And I love – see, here's the thing. There are so many people who I truly like, but I don't like to work with. And to give an example, when I brought up that they were going to start paying Tony or the position years ago, I'm like, hey, that's great. Because then there's accountability. Then you can't argue the fact we're losing, fire him, you know? And I was everybody. How dare you? How dare you, William? Tony's on this, Tony's on that. And I'm like, I like Tony. I'm looking at the results. We keep losing and losing and losing. And then to this same other conservative, I asked, Carl has won one thing to my knowledge when he recalled the guy from Orange County who 6 months later won that seat back, you know? And I asked him, because I was out of politics, you know, COVID had hit and all this, what's he done since then? The gas tax reveal, all these things, we lose. So he may be our state's best activist, but we're still losing. And I am hearing all these other things about him. And I asked that guy, well, where's all the money going for Reform California? And his answer was, everybody else has that question too. Go ahead, Amy.
Well, so there is an 85-year-old woman. Her name's Joanne. She used to volunteer for Reform California just about every day. And so she received an email from Reform California saying, please give money for office supplies for Reform California. So she clicked on the donate button, and then she got an email saying, thank you for giving to Carl DeMille for Assembly. So she called the office. She got a response 3 days later, and this is somebody who used to volunteer every single day in his office, saying, hey, 50% of everything that's going to Reform California is going to Carl DeMille for Assembly. And I have done this too. I received the Reform California emails, and it says Reform California, give to Reform California. You click on the donate button, and then it takes you to donate to Carl DeMille for Assembly. And that's why he's being investigated by the FPPC, the Fair Political Practices Commission. I mean, when do you see Carl DeMille ever do a fundraiser for himself? He's getting all of the money from Reform California, and it's going to his Assembly race. And then,
so that's where the money is going, is what you're saying.
Just go to my social media, because I am a state licensed private investigator in California, 21006. I've been active, and I'm in good standing since 1999. So I've been doing my investigative work on him. And the fact of the matter is, it's called the New Progressive PAC. And you can see where Reform California gave to the New Progressive PAC. Well, the New Progressive PAC sent out mailers to Democrats in AD 75, calling his opponent, Andrew Hayes, a MAGA extremist.
Amy, we're going to get to all that.
So anyway, long story short, there is a lot to uncover when it comes to Carl DeMille. And what your audience doesn't know is I actually did have the courage to stand up to him. I turned the other cheek for years for the sake of unity.
Right.
He's done a lot of things to me and other people I know. And a couple weeks ago, he personally threatened me. And that was my line in the sand. And that's when I said, enough is enough.
You know, Amy, that's why this is tough for me, because I've done what you've done. I'm like, for the great, because I'm like, Carl does this, Carl does that. But the last year and a half, I've been like, where's that money going for Reform California? Because even though I wasn't researching or anything of that, anecdotally, I was realizing, we're not winning anything with him, and you're right. And, you know, I noticed he's asking for all this money, and I'm like, but we're not winning. I see just a campaign here or there. And, yeah, you're right. It's let's talk about his
go ahead. And he threatened you. He sounds like a bully.
Yes, we're going to get to all that in it. That's why I wanted to have this episode.
Yeah, okay.
It's time to have this conversation. And I want to tell the audience, I asked Carl come on, or to have a representative to come on so he could give his point of view. I asked Andrew Hayes, and we also asked the Republican Party. And Amy's the only one willing to come on. And I'm not defending them, but I didn't expect them to come on, because this is a tough issue to deal with. It's one of those things nobody wants to talk about. But Amy's talking about it, and Amy's going to end up having to pay a price. But she has a spine, you know? And sometimes it takes that one person to galvanize the rest of the individuals. So let's talk about Carl's track record. This is how I see it. Carl always starts out as a phenomenal campaigner, but then he becomes his own worst enemy and does something and doesn't listen. I always felt He never had a true campaign manager, but a circle of yes people. You know, and I don't know. That's just the impression I got. And the reason I say that is because he was the San Diego City Council, got elected for that from 2008 to 2012. And he'd already passed his time when I came aboard. So when I got introduced to him, he lost the 2012 San Diego mayoral election. And that I thought was like, God, he ran a terrible campaign there with some of the things he said. Or he immediately came out with the gay this, gay that. I'm like, hey, I get it. I don't care. But that's not how you're going to win a lot of conservative votes in certain demographics. Then he lost the 2014 congressional election. Then he lost the 2020 congressional election. And I just came to the belief that, man, this guy just does not know how to campaign. Then he started to run a brilliant 2024 campaign. And like I said, whether we like him or not, that's what I saw. But it wasn't as much that he was running a great campaign as, and I love Andrew Hayes to death. I met him in 2015. I've had coffee with him. He let me interview him. But I'm like, dude, I would have fired your campaign manager after you got shellacked on the primary night because you are and were the endorsed candidate. There's no way you should have gotten shellacked as bad as you did. But I never saw him in Valley Center. But I saw Carl all the time. You know, I always heard from Carl. I always saw Carl's message in front of me. I never saw Andrew. Then they had a debate here. I'm like, where's Andrew? Oh, no, he's up in Sacramento. Then I talked to the person giving that debate. Oh, he could have come down. He just chose not to come down. And I'm like, you're running a terrible campaign. So I think Andrew
works full time. He's the district director for.
It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter.
Carl DeMille has reformed California where he's raising all this money.
It doesn't
and
matter.
He's campaigning 60. I think it's, I don't think it's a fair.
It's not fair, thing. But life isn't fair, Amy. Life's not fair. At the end of the day, what I said is how I look at it. So I'm not disputing what you said, but life's not fair. This is politics. This is war.
I think it's illegal. I think what Carl DeMille is doing is illegal, and he's going to have to face the consequences from the Fair Political Practices Commission.
Right. Okay. So real quick, before we get to that, because it's obvious you're passionate, and it's not like I'm defending them. I'm trying to present these facts as a constituent sees them and as the reality of politics, because to your point again, you're right. Andrew works and all that, but at the end of the day, the constituents don't care. They want to see their candidate. And that's the bottom line. And it sucks. You work hard. You don't get to see the fruits of your hard work at times when somebody else comes along who doesn't have the same constraints that you have. Gee, your thoughts on DeMille's track record politically with these races, and then in contrast, how he's running this one and having shellacked Andrew in that primary?
No, I mean, I think he ran for mayor, lost, ran for Congress, he lost, I believe twice, right? Or the second time he lost in the primary. So right. I was really tuning in during the ISA battle in the 50th district, right? That's when I started to tune in to Carl. And I don't know, he came off as a firebrand, but ISA just came in as the elder statesman, right? So ISA ended up winning the day in the primary and has been our congressman in the 50th for the second term now. So it's not a good track record to lose and lose and lose. And you're supposed to carry with you a trail of, well, he can't seem to win, right? So he did win one, but that was now 16 years ago. I think what Amy's saying is be honest and true, right? So I know Andrew Hayes. We work together on different school board issues. We worked hard with the vaccine thing. I think Annette was with us there saying, liberals in Sacramento, you always say my body, my choice. How come it's not my body, my choice anymore when it comes to vaccines, especially for our kids? Andrew was at the forefront of that and fought really hard and took a principled stand against that and masking our kids in the early 2022, early of that year. So,
Hold on. Real quick. Yeah. That's great. Nobody here knows about that. You see what I'm trying to say? It's great, but you're talking inside the weeds, and I get that because I'm there with you. But the constituents don't either remember that or know about that, and that's what I'm talking about in terms of how to run a campaign.
Or is that really relevant anymore? Like, everyone has COVID fatigue, right? I'm bringing it up, but, you know, that's almost a distant memory 2.5 years ago.
No, that's not COVID fatigue. That's about how he stood up for the rights.
You think anyone wants to talk about COVID anymore?
No, it's not about COVID. It's about how I fought for you. That's what that message is about. And COVID.
I went to a Hayes fundraiser, and Matt and I went there. What was it? Wednesday, mm-hmm. And he talked about it there, right? So I don't know where he would have a soapbox to talk about it, right? Carl has his microphone on AM 600 every day, but Andrew Hayes doesn't have that. So he goes to different places. I think that's why he couldn't be here tonight. He had a campaign stop in Ramona, I believe it was. So. So, you know, he is talking about, he did talk about that, Wednesday night. We were there, we heard it, and, so I'm not taking away from Carl. I'm just saying that's why I'm supporting Andrew. But, you know, that's just part of the story. You were asking about the races that he's running, and look, whoever wins assembly, they're going to be 1 out of 19, right? They're super minority. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
In the end, I know Andrew will fight hard for whatever he wants to fight hard for. He's been able to create a coalition and gather people and fight for a cause, even when it's in the minority, such as vaccinations or unmasking our kids.
Right, right. So for the audience, in the primary that I'm referring to, in California, for people who are nationwide here, in California we have what's called the jungle primary, the top two winners regardless of party. And Carl DeMaio took it at 43%. And when he entered the race, G, that was my issue, was like, oh, my God, this guy has his radio. And that's where I agree with you, Amy. He's working. But at the end of the day, the constituents don't care. Life's not fair. But that did confirm his power of that radio show and his ability to be out in the district. And he did file on the last day you could file. So this was something he was planning all along. But nevertheless, I'll stick to my guns. And Andrew needs to be – we've lost exponentially in this state. For certain reasons. And I think Andrew is carrying on those reasons why we lost and how he's campaigning this cycle. See, I think y'all are mixing in your personal friendship. You know him and you dislike Carl. I'm not taking away from that. I'm looking at it from how people run races and looking at it from a constituent standpoint because he's there. This is actually my district, the 75th. So I'm looking at it from a different angle. And that's when I get frustrated. That's when I get frustrated at Republicans. Why are you running your campaign this way? So for example, Trump is they use Trump against you, Amy, and I get mad at that, but I don't get mad at them using Trump against you. I get mad at the Republican Party for never having defended Trump, and when you don't defend your own candidate, those lies become truths, so they can tag those lies on to other party members, and that's what happened to you, and that's when I get angry at our own party, like, why weren't you defending Trump? And it wasn't at the local level. That was at the national level with the powers there. So you were kind of screwed before you even got started, you know? So I get that. I just, when I just saw the 43% to 19%, because I was an idiot, I'm like, oh, Andrew's an endorsed guy. Yeah, he's going to win the primary, you know? But then when I saw how bad he got shellacked, and the reason I'm saying this and is I do resent the fact that Carl doesn't live in my district. You know, my district is a red district. So whoever runs in this district, you're in. And that's what, see, and it's not just Carl. On the 50th, it was Carl and Issa. Y'all don't live in our district. What are you doing here, Issa? Go back to the 49th. We need that district, but you won't because you want to win. And I was originally a supporter of one candidate, and I was heavily involved in that because I put on the debate. And when I went around talking to people, this is what I heard about Carl. Oh, I like Carl, but he's arrogant. He's mean. I just don't. And he lost votes that way. And I think that's where he's a terrible campaigner. His arrogance gets the better of him. And I still see that arrogance here. And I think that is Andrew's one in to get back in this race. And I think this whole situation, Amy, that has blown up with the resources, they may be broke, but they still do. The average Republican, they see the endorsed candidate. It's just human nature. They're going to vote. And that is, so I'm like, Carl stepped in it. His ego got the better of him. So Annette, your thoughts on the fact when you see the candidate who's not endorsed get shellacked at 43% to 19%. And let me add this caveat. His second place win was fingers crossed. We had to wait for days. My fingers were crossed. I'm like, oh my God, Andrew, you got to get a second. Cause he was in third place after that election. You know, they keep counting and he kept moving up, eventually got second place. But what are your thoughts of an endorsed candidate only being able to muster 19% of the vote to 43% from the outside candidate?
You mean because he got the Republican endorsement?
Yeah, that's a powerful endorsement, and it meant nothing in that primary. And to me, part of it was because how he campaigned.
But can I just say, my dog, Clover is a part of the show, and he needs to not be here anymore. So I just want to say, what we talk about this all the time, William, about politics, and it's about power. And I think this is like too philosophical, but it, honestly, this is the thing that's the most troubling to me about having these conversations is how power hungry these people are. And it really always ends up, never ends up being about the actual constituents. Oh, I'm going to fight for you. Give me a break. I mean, the reason why I believe that in Andrew is because I saw him fight for me and I saw something get accomplished. I mean, I did see him call me up. He didn't even know me. He wanted me to come to wherever he was. It was not where I live. We drove out there and he tried to get people together. He tried to get people to have the conversation. So a couple different times in the 4 years that I've been on the school board, which is just, I've only been on one term, he was able to do that and get me more involved than I was in a bigger, more like countywide way. So I actually believe he's a principled person. I know that wasn't the answer to your question, but what I'm saying is what we see so often in politics when people run and run and run again, though, no, they're not seeking the good of the people. They're not. They're seeking their own power. And that really is, that's a very troubling thing to me. I think it's something we have to talk about, and it's the kind of people we need to stay away from. We don't want people like that in politics because they don't have the goodwill for their fellow man. I know it's hard to discern that because it seems like now everybody in politics is out for themselves. I don't believe everybody is. But what's happening now is the really good people that care about their fellow man won't even attempt to run because of people like Carl. They're just like, I will not be involved in this. This is too, politics does not have to be ugly. We talk about this too, William. It doesn't have to be though, because I do think we can bring it to a better place. But when things like this happen, I mean, part of it would be great if we could have the party be more aligned with one another. I think in this case, they got behind the person they believed was the most principled person, who was the most conservative person, who was going to fight the battles in the state of California that need to be fought. And he wasn't going to, you know, I mean, hopefully he's going to, you know, compromise. That's necessary, I think. But he's also going to have that line that he doesn't cross. And I honestly think that he is the person who has the integrity.
Just a quick point, a story on that. A couple of years ago, Mayor Bailey of Coronado and I were asked to speak to the Del Mar Republican Women's Group. And so we're sitting next to each other, and Richard turns to me and goes, so, gee, what do you think about running for next? I just won re-election on the school board. And I turned to him and I said, I just don't have any desire to run for anything else. Like, I can't get down to the gutter level of what some of these politicians do, just like what Annette was just saying, right? Like, if they're going to be in the dirt, you almost have to go back down into the dirt in order to win. And he just turned to me and said, that's too bad. Like, usually good people don't run at for the higher offices because of that. And it just goes against their principles. So that is a good point.
Let's talk about what happened to Richard Bailey. What about him? He is so smart. He is.
Hold on. Annette, tell the audience who Richard Bailey is.
He is the mayor of Coronado.
Mm-hmm.
And he was going to run for Congress, and you know that he did not continue in that race. He and I spoke about that. You know, we had a cup of coffee together, and we talked about that. Because of the redistricting, yes. Thank you very much. And then he was going to run I mean, am I allowed to say this?
County supervisor.
No, am I allowed to say it? I don't know. Can I say this?
Say it.
Okay, well,
yeah,
say it. Because we ended up going for Kevin Faulkner. Are you serious now? Richard would have been amazing.
Hold on. You're saying Richard was going to run, but they chose Kevin Faulkner? Is that what you're saying, the party?
Yes.
No. I did not know that.
I will tell you a little story.
I feel like I'm going to be in trouble now. I can't get an
answer. No, you're not. I am not a fan of Faulkner. Faulkner has blocked me because I've called him out so much. Go ahead, Amy.
Okay. So last year, 2023, when I ran in the special election, I, through pure heart and hustle, and millions of dollars in special interest money, where the powers that be wanted it to be two Democrats versus each other in the general. What happened was I was able, in a D plus 30 district with only 19% Republicans, I was able to make the top two. I received a phone call after the primary. Now, keep in mind, I still have, you know, 3 months left until the general in this special election. And the call is from Carl DeMaio. And I expect it to be a congratulations, you've made the top two. Instead, he said, Amy, I think you'll make a great La Mesa City Councilwoman. He then went on to say, you shouldn't raise any more money. Don't use your volunteers. I had over 250 volunteers. And he said to me to stop campaigning. I later found out it was Democrats that had him make that phone call to me.
Wow.
And he was telling me, oh, you just need to keep your energy to run for La Mesa City Council. Meanwhile, he was telling Democrats in La Mesa, oh, hey, Amy Reichert's going to run for La Mesa City Council next year. You better clear the field and start raising money. And that's exactly what they started doing.
These were all things
I looked the other way, by the way, that he did out of, for the sake of unity. He was also going to caucus meetings and openly telling people who were excited about my campaign and asking them, hey, Carl, you should be helping Amy more. You know, what can we do to help Amy? He told a room full of people at a caucus, do not give any money to Amy Reichert. Save your money for Kevin Faulkner. So to your question, Annette, how did that whole thing shake out? Why was it Richard Bailey versus Kevin Faulkner? Carl DeMaio got behind Faulkner because of his personal grudge against Richard Bailey. And I have made a vow, and let me just finish here. 7 days before my special election, by the way, my whole thing before was never mudsling, stick to the issue, never name call.
Yep.
And 7 days before the special election, my opponent, Monica Montgomery Stepp, went on Instagram and she said, Amy Reichert thinks Hitler jokes are funny. I was raised Jewish. I had a bat mitzvah. I went to Hebrew school. I became a Christian in my 30s. She had heard my faith journey many times at different forums. These people are ruthless and toxic. And I made a commitment at that time. You know what? Don't be afraid of what they're going to say about your past because they're just going to make stuff up. And that's when I took the gloves off and I vowed that I was going to be true and authentic and speak the truth. And so I'm sitting right here in my house knowing that when I speak out against somebody like Carl DeMaio, who has a PAC worth millions and millions of dollars, who literally called me on the phone on September 11th and threatened me over a minor party squabble that he was having. And he wanted me to denounce the chair publicly. And when I said no, he said that he would do everything in his power, that I would never hold any leadership position in the Republican Party. And then he said, oh, 2 years from now, if you want to run for something, I'm not going to endorse you on my voter guide. And I'm going to make sure, Amy, that you never hold an elected position ever again. I'm going to leave it to your imagination what the next few words out of my mouth were to him.
Well, we'll get to that. Let's set it up for you.
This man is toxic. And the reason why I spoke up for is I am fighting for the heart and soul of the San Diego Republican Party to bring it back to life, because the heart and soul of this party is not the toxic Carl DeMaio, who's done nothing but badmouth and just suck the party dry with his drama. Boom.
Gotcha. We're going to get into that too deep. I want to set it up for the audience in terms of how we got to this. Real quick on Annette, I'd love to believe what you say. That's not how politics works. Gee, I don't know if it'll represent us at the end of the day. I'm looking at it as an outsider, meaning as a constituent, as somebody who was actually involved. I ran for my little office planning group here. One, I saw politics. I'm not like a professional, but I've seen enough to understand how this works. My concern with Andrew is, will he show up when we need him, or will he vote party line? Nice guy. I like him. History in this party, whether San Diego or in California, they will acquiesce to what the state party wants him. And people try to tell him, William, the chair, they're not tied and say, yeah, they are. You know, don't try to tell me a technicality. It's all tied together. Politics is ugly. What got me gravitating to Carl and what got me gravitating to Amy is they were both grassroots fighters. Now, I'm not talking about the core of their people, but what they are, because Amy, we're going to get to that part. And that's why, I guess I'll say it. It's going to cost me here, but I was a Carl DeMaio supporter for the 50th. I ended up not voting for him because of, I saw a lot of what you said. You know, and I said, and my take is I want somebody who's going to represent the district. But the truth of the matter, in that 50th race, Brian Jones was the best candidate and he lived in the district. There was no way in hell it's like it was a wasted vote. He just did not have the support, wasn't charismatic enough, and the party was not doing enough for him, the actual conservative who lived in the district, because of Carl and Daryl. They had their supporters within the party. So Brian Jones was a odd man out, you know, and that race boiled down to Carl and Daryl, and they both hated each other and it made for good drama. But my whole point is it was fixed. Brian Jones never had a chance. And when I looked at that field, that was the best conservative out of all three of them, you know, and I liked them all because I'm able to separate the person. But then I got to know Carl a bit more, and I didn't like the tactics. Because I believe you fight hard with the truth. Because I'm like, you fight as hard as a Democrat, but if you use the truth, that's even more devastating, you know? So I don't, we're going to get to the hangers. And Amy, I know you got some choice words about that. when I found that out, I had two thoughts real quick. It's like, you don't do that. But then my second thought was, y'all should have known. If I had been Andrew's campaign consultant, dude, I mean, not that specifically, but we can expect something like that from him, and we got to be prepared. And that's why to you, Annette, I'm like, politics is dirty. You better have a damn campaign manager that knows what's going to happen and be able to counter it. And to Amy, you're right. He's working. Life's not fair. You know, so we knew, or rather, Andrew Hayes's campaign should have known what he was facing. So when Carl entered, I cringe because I'm like, oh, Andrew, you know, good guy, get this. And I cringed because, one, he was an outsider coming into my district. But I knew the power behind him, the power of that radio show, the power of his grassroots Reform California. It doesn't matter how he – I mean, it does matter how he got those people. But it doesn't matter because at the end of the day, he's got the machine working. It's like the Democrats.
So, go ahead, Jim. So should we go through this? I mean, we've been talking about it. Okay. But we got to get to that story so that – the audience right. can understand the risk,
so,
right?
Right. Yeah. So real quick, so what happened to the audience is Carl DeMaio destroyed Andrew Hayes in the primary. And I don't say that in a mean way. That's a factual way. It was 43% to Andrew's 18.6%. And what that did is that set the table up for Carl to take greater control. Because I shellacked him, and I wasn't even the endorsed candidate. So what happened was Carl was like, I need to be the endorsed candidate. And I got angry because Andrew was the endorsed candidate, and tradition sets They endorse a candidate. It's not just through the primary. It's through the general. And then these little rules came out. Well, it's not official for the general. And Carl used that to make a power play. He had, in my opinion, and you three can correct me if I'm wrong. In my opinion, he had Paula Witzel in his back pocket, and he had Tony Kovarik's support, you know, to make this happen. So what happened was there had to be a negotiation for peace. Because Carl was pushing. Carl was making waves. So they negotiated for peace. And initially, Corey Gustafson, who was not the chair of the party, but just a member of the committee, was representing Carl's interests. You know, that's why I was so shocked at what happened later. And they had a negotiation to the audience. DeMaio agreed not to seek the party's endorsement or support non-endorsed candidates. And Amy, you know this better than I do. So correct me if I stray here wrongly. But so DeMaio agreed not to seek the party's endorsement or support non-endorsed candidates, and Paula Witzel resigned as chair. And Corey Gustafson, who was negotiating on Carl DeMaio's behalf, became the new party chair. So I'm looking at it as an outsider, and I'm livid because I'm like, Carl got his person in. But I wasn't as livid as I became when I found out that Andrew kept the endorsement, but he got no money from the party's victory fund. He could not appear in the Republican Party voter guide, and the party would not mention the 75th Assembly District race on the website. And my take was, what the hell? Then you don't have nothing but the endorsement in name. Because I do know enough about politics that most Republican voters do not follow politics like we do. We're part of the machine in the sense we know what's happening. Most Republican voters, they get those mailers or they see who the party endorses and they just vote for that person. That's sad, but true. So when I saw that Andrew could not get any of that stuff, I'm like, well, then he's got the endorsement by name. And to me, that was a DeMaio victory. So my question to you guys before we move on to the next section is, given that Hayes lost access to significant – and this was significant – and financial promotional resources typically afforded to the endorsed candidate, which includes party funds, mailers, the voter guide. Those are strategic advantages. What did he actually gain with this compromise? Amy, I'll wait for you last, but – G, you first. What did Andrew actually gain with this negotiation for peace and this, he kept the endorsement but in name only? What did he gain?
I mean, I'm interested in hearing what Amy has to say, but my short comment is, what were we trying to gain with Carl DeMaio, right? Not putting
him down.
That's
not the question. The question is, what did Andrew, we're going to stick to this topic. What did he gain by that negotiated peace?
Andrew got nothing out of it, right? If he's not on the website, he's not getting the money. I think Andrew can walk around saying, I'm endorsed by the San Diego Republican Party, but if it's not an official website and all that, then no, he lost a lot more than he gained.
Amy, I'm sorry. Yeah, I'm sorry. Not Amy. Annette. Yeah. Annette. So he did, per G, and I agree with him, he didn't gain anything. So why would Andrew's side have negotiated that?
No, it was a loss for him. For sure. Why did they negotiate it for him? I don't know.
I don't think Andrew's team negotiated. I think it's.
In that situation, Andrew had to have been part of it. Amy, what's your thought on that part, on this?
Carl put the party in just an insane position. It was yet another example of how he took an internal Republican matter to the press. And he is a major leaker of stories. And that's exactly what happened. Once it blew up publicly, what Andrew had to do was save face, and there were just mass casualties everywhere. Paula Witzel, she lost being chair. And so I think Andrew was being the gentleman, actually, just to settle it, because Carl was going scorched earth like he always does, and he wasn't going to be happy until everybody was down on the ground.
That's a great answer, because you're right. That's exactly what happened. And that's why I got mad at Andrew. I'm like, scorched earth or not, you got to stand up for yourself, because I don't know if you guys realize it, Amy. You ran in a big race there, but that endorsement and those mailers and the Republican voter guide, that's tens of thousands of just given votes because people don't follow politics. So they just go by that guy. So I was devastated when I saw that. But to me, that was Carl being Carl. And when I looked at Paula, I'm like, that's what you get for sleeping with the devil.
William, though, what are you saying? Because you're saying that Andrew shouldn't take the high road?
Yes, he should have fought. He should have gotten in the trenches and fought for his life. Because status quo remains as it is. It changed. It completely changed. We're going to get into that next. But had this status quo remained in place, Andrew has no shot at winning this race. That's how important that voter guide from the Republican Party is. And people, we may disagree on that, but that's one of the most important aspects of being a registered Republican. You get that voter guide. I don't have time to go listen to the candidates. I'm working. I got a family. I got kids. Who do the Republicans say to vote for? Oh, they say to vote for Andrew Hayes. Boom, I'll vote for him. With that gone, I thought the race was lost. That's why I got so angry at Andrew. It's like, you got to fight. Even if you lose that fight, you got to fight. But what I said, Carl always starts out strong and kind of screws himself. And that's where we get to our present state. So after becoming chair, and I credit Corey Gustafson. I don't know him, but he was Carl's representative. So I assume he was in Carl's back pocket. So when I saw this, I was like, I got hope in the party again. What happened is after becoming chair, Gustafson, how do you say that? Gustafson? Is that how you say it? Huh?
Gustafson.
Gustafson. Okay. Anybody know what that is?
Dutch?
Gustafson. Where's Big John? He knows. He always knows that stuff. Gustafson. So by September 2024, Gustafson was overseeing a dramatic enforcement action against DeMaio. And this action was in response to DeMaio violating the agreement. So what I mean by stepping in it, he should have just stayed out of it, but he put his foot in it because he violated the agreement. To the audience, part of the agreement to make peace was Carl would not endorse a candidate that the Republican Party had not endorsed, meaning he would either stay silent or support the endorsed candidate by the Republican Party, and he did not. On the Poway City Council, there was a call to the audience, has been at war with the police department from his days in the city council. Mm-hmm. I know this firsthand, even though this was before my time, because I took self-defense course from this one guy for over 10 years, and he was a cop. And when I brought up, call this, call that, he just stopped, looked at me, and forgive me, he goes, fuck that guy. He stopped, we were like, I'm punching, he just stopped, and he said, fuck that guy. And I was like, whoa, what? And then he explained to me the whole union battle. Because he was, he's a cop. And that battle, even though it kind of went away, obviously is still there. And the police faction has never forgotten that. And Amy, feel free to jump in here. But what I saw from this or read from this and research is that the police department a society of it, one of those associations of it, filed the complaint that you alluded to earlier regarding Carl and Reform California. And in Carl's eyes, you don't cross Carl. It's like the mafia. You do not cross Carl. And in his eyes, that benevolent police society crossed him when they filed the complaint. And because of that, he chose to endorse Carl, that candidate's opponent in the Poway City Council. And he chose to endorse the opponent, not the Republican Party endorsed candidate. And that put us at war, or that put him at war with the party because he broke the agreement. Am I correct in how I've laid it out?
So if it wasn't this, I guarantee you it would have been something else. It has been nonstop drama, toxicity, and infighting. And it always comes back to Carl DeMaio. Any of you guys remember Twilight Zone? Like growing up watching the reruns?
Yep.
Remember that?
Oh, yeah.
Remember that episode where the adults, they're sitting in a living room and there's a boy. And this boy, if you say anything wrong to this boy that the world is not shiny and bright, right? The adult gets banished to a cornfield and turned into a jack-in-the-box. Do you remember that episode?
Yes.
I can say hello easily.
What's that?
Yeah, well, all the adults are walking on eggshells. That is what it's like with Carl DeMaio. And I just
But Amy, this setup, though, this is kind of what happened. This is what brought us to this point, right?
But it was going to be something. Yes.
Oh, no, I get that. I get that.
That's how this latest thing started. And so that, and I'm just going to share, I was not even involved in this at all. So
okay, see that? Okay, that's news.
I was not even involved in the slightest. So remember the presidential debate night?
September 10th.
I had organized a watch party at the Ultra Star Movie Theater in Mission Valley, and we had 150 people there. I get a call from one of Carl DeMaio's people, right? And I knew it was important because he's calling. It must be important. So I answer and go, is this important? Because I'm organizing the debate and it's going to start in a few minutes. And he said, yes, it is. And then that's when he told me about the latest fight with the Republican Party, which I had nothing to do with. And then he said that if the chair didn't do what they wanted to, that Carl was going to send an email from Reform California telling everybody don't donate one more dime to the Republican Party, right? So then the next morning, that's when things went public, and that's when I got the infamous call from Carl himself threatening me. So it's just threat after threat and drama after drama. And this is why even if he got elected, he would never be successful in Sacramento because he doesn't even know how to work with people on his own side. And the Democrats, by the way, have power over what size office you get in Sacramento. They're going to put him in the broom closet. And Carl's not even going to have the support of his own Republicans because he's been stabbing everybody in the back for the past 3 years because Carl DeMaio is about Carl DeMaio. And I'm so sorry that I have to be this blunt and this true, but that is the fact.
No, Amy, you're right. In fact, again, I have a lot riding on this because I have a grassroots group going right now to fight a battle that against a corporation and lithium batteries. And
right down the street.
Then we have to talk afterwards. We have to talk
afterwards. I've been fighting this battle for the past year. Let's talk.
That said, Carl's responded already. He said he'll help our group. So I'm going to catch 22. You know?
How's he going to help? How's he going to help? He always offers help and then does nothing.
No. It's not that. I'm not asking for money. It's Carl has a powerful. I don't want to get sidetracked, but real quick, Carl has a powerful voice. He shellacked Andrew here again. 40-some-odd percent, 80%. Real quick. Who played that little boy, though? Hold on.
We don't know.
Who played that little boy? Who played that little boy in the Twilight Zone?
Wasn't it Opie? Was it Opie?
No. It was Billy Mummy from Lost in Space.
Oh, that's right. I can't get those two confused.
I know that is.
Billy Mummy, Lost in Space was a big hit show in the 60s. I'm dating myself. I'm not that old. I saw the reruns. But that's why I knew immediately what show you were talking about.
But I had a real quick question. The levity is nice. But I don't think it's clear. So Carl DeMaio called you on September 11th, right?
That's right.
And you said it was an infamous phone call, but you didn't describe what happened during the call. Or maybe you did earlier.
Actually,
that's a great point. So, Amy, I left it at the fact that Carl had broken the endorsement. What happened? And take us through steps. You get very passionate. But so take it through the steps of how it got to you, meaning what were the steps that led up to him making that call? Because he was pretty angry at that point.
You know, here's the thing. The guy just never stops. He's constantly on the phone calling people, right? I probably was his 20th phone call of the day, right? And on that particular morning, September 11th, I remember his tone of voice. He was talking faster than normal. And I just let him talk. Right. I knew that he was going to go scorched earth. That's what he does if he doesn't get his way. And so I had not even been involved in his assembly race. I was neutral. I had not endorsed Andrew. I had not endorsed Carl DeMaio. I don't live in AV 75. I don't have a dog in that race, right? In the, any skin in the game. So the fact that he went after me, somebody who had nothing to do with his current squabble with the Republican Party, someone who had not even endorsed any candidate in the race, and that he just went that nuclear. It's just,
well, hold on, Amy. Why did he choose you? Why did he? I mean, I think he chose you because he saw you rising up in cover.
20th call of the day. What he was asking me to do was to publicly denounce the chair. My Instagram following is now up to 36,000 followers. My ex, formerly Twitter, is now up to 11,000. So what he was trying to get me to do was to leverage my social media to publicly denounce the current chair of the Republican Party. I'm not going to do that. I wasn't going to do that. It's just ridiculous over his latest battle.
And so, and Amy, I just don't want to interrupt, but this is the letter that was sent out, and I assume this is part of the war that got that call towards you. And if it may be a little small for people to read, but in essence, what he's saying, and our producer, Big John, again, comes through, Gustafsson is of Swedish origin, you know. Corey sent out this letter, and this is when I gained hope, meaning, and when I say gain hope, the Republican Party's got to get it together, or the state's going to remain blue. So when I saw this, I'm like, they're standing up. They're finding, and it wasn't Carl, like anybody. In this case, it was Carl. And I, when I saw this email or letter to the Central Committee, where he's saying it's a time for choosing, how it was time to stand up for yourselves, in terms of, stop going with self-interest and political ambition above the good of the party is in essence what this is talking about. Cause that's how he viewed Carl DeMaio. And that's what you said, self-interest and political ambition. I think every politician is like that. I think Carl takes it to a different level. You know, Carl is like a Democrat in our party who fights like a Democrat. And again, I'm like, you fight that hard, but with the truth. And I think him calling you, Amy, was him trying to leverage his power over you. Like, she's an up-and-comer. She needs me more than I need her. And I don't think he was counting on your fortitude to go F off. I know what you're going to say, but I'm going to ask it so the audience can hear it from you. That's why you kind of stood up. You're like, no, I'm not that person. I am for not my self-interest, but for the greater good of the party and for the greater good of the constituent. Am I correct in that assessment?
It was about my own self-dignity. It was about my character. He was using his voter guide over my head and some possible political future. And I love what G said earlier. It's like, no, like G was saying, his character, his integrity is not worth sacrificing for political gain. And that's how I feel at the end of the day. Nothing is worth sacrificing my integrity. And so when he threatened me in that manner, that was like, no. I know, right? I prayed about this, if I should go come forward or not. And I am someone of faith. I'm a Christian. And I got God's peace after I prayed. But I also knew that I was going to be accepting the consequences of my decision, and that Carl DeMaio, being the toxic bully that he is, and many people have compared him to Nathan Fletcher, just being the flip side of him, that I would be facing standing up to him and saying what happened to me for the next couple decades. This is somebody who has carried minor grudges against people supposedly in his own tent in the Republican Party for decades.
That's absolutely true.
Look at Carl DeMaio's recent voter guide. I think he sent an email today. Look at he's saying that he doesn't have enough money for postage, and so he's begging for money to be able to send it out. So you look at the voter recommendations. In the case of Joel Anderson's race, where he's running against Gina Jacobs, who, by the way, is a DEI equity officer for the Port of San Diego and a Democrat. It says Joel Anderson, for the audience. Still vetting candidates. So he's Joel Anderson over some grudge he's had with Joel Anderson. Right.
Guys, a favor. When you talk about a candidate, say what race, only because we're inside the week.
Supervisor District 2.
There you go.
Joel Anderson is currently supervisor, County Board of Supervisor, District 2. He's running for re-election against Gina Jacobs.
So that's the person. No, I saw the voter guide. I said, which candidate would you refer to?
Really? Yeah. Really, Carl? You're vetting Joel Anderson, a Republican, the incumbent, against Gina Jacobs, a nobody, who's a Democrat and a DEI equity officer? No, this is about petty grudges and power. When you look at Bill Royal's race, he's running for Congress against Sarah Jacobs. He won't endorse Bill Wells.
In fact, why is that? I was going to ask you that. Why is that?
He's got a long-standing grudge against Bill Wells, too. And Bill Wells is a constitutionalist. He's been a strong, popular mayor, conservative in El Cajon. But again, it all comes back to his Carl DeMaio and his petty grudges. Right. So his voter guide is just a pack of lies and a way for him to raise money and to hold it over people's heads. He thought he could put his voter guide over my head. And I'll tell you what, I've said this before. I'll say it again. I will die standing before I will ever die on my knees with Carl DeMaio's stupid voter guide over my head. That's for sure.
You know, I feel like you guys have daggers in your eyes when I talk, because I'm not defending Carl. I try to present it. You may be right, but the reality of it
people
is
need to that know voter the guide. Truth. That, I don't mind.
I understand. But that voter guide is very powerful. That's why he can use it that way. He has a lot of followers. You know, early on, I don't go to voter guides now. I do my own research, but I'm not going to lie. There was only one voter guide I trusted, and that was Carl's, because of that good. So my point to you guys is, you're saying how he uses it for power, and I agree, because he should have endorsed Bill Wells, and he should. And I'm not as big a Joel Anderson fan as I used to be, but that's a no-brainer. You have to endorse him. So my point to you guys is, it's a powerful guide, and there are a lot of good endorsed candidates on there, but he abuses it by using it as he's weaponized it because Bill Wells, I'm like, we're in a race for Congress, you know. And on a side note, one of my issues with Carl is that, again, I've been hammering on Andrew Hayes and I won't back down, but here's what I will say about that. What I like about Andrew is, I know when he's going to Sacramento, he's going there as a state assembly person. I fear that when Carl goes there, oh, I got another 2 years here before I can run for Congress. That's what I see there with that. And he's going to run for Congress after ISA retires, you know? And that kind of bugs me, because he doesn't live in my district. So there's a lot of things there. But when I present to you guys, I try to present the reality. He's a powerful figure. And that mail guy, that voter guide. But let's stay on the voter guide and digress from it, but stay related to the power that Carl has with these printed materials. And, I did not know about this until less than a week ago. And that's, his tactics have also raised eyebrows, particularly his use of progressive messaging on issues like abortion rights. I look at these voter guides and I'm like, they're a dime a dozen. And I'm like, oh, this progressive California voter guide is just another Democrat voter guide, until I started doing my research. And it turns out this progressive California voter guide is not a progressive California voter guide. It's a reform California voter guide. And it's a door hanger that says Andrew Hayes is a Make America Great Again extremist. See, to me, this is now crossing the line. I say you fight dirty like a Democrat, but you fight with the truth. This is a blatant lie. Andrew Hayes is not a Make America Great Again extremist. You know, and for him to say that and then to turn around and tell an audience as he's speaking, oh, I'm a Trump supporter. Well, doesn't that make you a Make America Great Again extremist? You know, so from an ethics standpoint, and I was raised by a fundamentalist, but I have my issues with the church. But at my core being, there is right and wrong, and there is righteousness, you know. And when you fight a war, even in politics, you can't lie. because then you've betrayed your constituent. Because if you're going to lie to your constituent, and this is a form of lying to constituents, then you can never be trusted. And so to break down the numbers, DeMaio's various committees gave $95,000 to this. It was a slate mailer, I guess, that went out to voters calling on them to defend choice. So what he's doing is he's reaching out to Democrat voters in my district and saying, this guy is against you. Now, you guys are going to hate me, but my take is, Carl, you're a pro-choice guy. You should have just come out here yourself and said it, but you had to hide behind it and use a different tactic that that destroys the Republican Party. You know what I'm saying is you're helping to destroy the Republican Party. Why not just come out and say, like Gunderson, Matt Gunderson, I'm pro-choice. You know, he said it in a commercial on a football game, millions of viewers. Carl won't do that. You know, when I did my research, I realized he hems and haws on his, he's pro-choice, but depending what election and what the winds are, he hems and haws on how he responds to the abortion question. At least be proud, and he's not. So that kind of bothered me. The Miles Campaign for Assembly paid $15,000 for the mailer. Reform California paid the $80,000. Before y'all comment, let me get this image up. That's the image there, and what's been circled there is, you know what? I'm going to make it bigger here so the audience sees it. You see that circle there? Late payment received from Reform California with Carl DeMaio. What bothered me was somebody said, is this true on social media? And he flat out said no. Yet here's the proof. This is the information that – this is the legal crap. You know? This is what you always hear the media say this, and when they're under oath, they say the actual truth. This is the truth here. Amy, I want to save your comment for last. G, what do you think of a mailer like this that paints Carl's opponent as the Make America Great Again extremist? It's supposedly from a Democrat group. In reality, the proof here shows that it's from Reform California. Your thoughts on that type of campaign tactic?
No, I mean, I think when you campaign, you stand on your own merits, right? And where you attack someone, and that's part of politics, you attack them on something that they're presenting as incorrect. That's what I would do, right? As a principled person, if my opponent says there's something and they're not that, then I would probably attack them and say, okay, no, this is what you really are and don't pretend to be this thing. But that would be a rare thing. I would run on what I am. So you're correct. If Carl DeMaio wants to run for the seat, he should talk about how pro-choice he is, like Matt Gunderson is doing in his congressional race in the 49, and stand on that merit. And if that's what wins the day, that's what wins the day. But to attack Andrew for his stance, which is actually Andrew is pro-life, and he's unashamedly pro-life.
Mm-hmm.
So where's the attack, right? So he's trying to get Democrat voters. And so I don't know what where he's going with his race. Is he going to be another Brian Manshine? Another Nathan Fletcher, like someone had said earlier? That's concerning to me.
Well, if you're mentioning those two individuals in the terms they Manchin was for Manchin and Fletcher for Fletcher, then yes, that is true. Now, I'm not defending him, but that's most politicians. But he took it to a level that is unworthy of any politician running. This is a Democrat tactic. That's why I said earlier, his campaign manager should have seen. I did not see this coming, but I saw something coming from him in this form or fashion because that's how he campaigns. So to see it like this, though, was even a shocker for me. Annette, your thoughts?
Well,
and Annette,
well,
I know you probably
have
some thoughts on it.
Just one thing real quick. You see that email address right there, right? And
Yes. Who is April Bowling? Why is that name familiar?
Well, I just Google it, and it's a taxpayer watchdog San Diegan, part of Progressive California Voter Guide. So that's a little confusing. I think a taxpayer watchdog is usually conservative. So,
yeah, I saw that. I thought you knew her personally. No. Like I said, I do research in depth. I saw that. But Annette, I know how you feel about pro-life and pro-choice, and You're like Amy, and that's like our white knight in terms of how she looks at life, and we need that. So what are your thoughts on that when you see this?
I'm disappointed a little bit in you, William, because you probably didn't even realize it, but a little bit earlier, maybe half an hour ago, you said, you know, and you just said it again, like this is sort of what you expect from politicians, right? Like what are they going to do? They're power hungrier. They are dishonest. But really, now you're saying – you do an expectation for them to have some integrity. I mean, so I'm curious.
Okay, no, stop. I'll explain.
Okay.
That is how politicians are. But if we're going to hold ourselves to a standard, I hold myself to a standard when I run. And the people who are part of our local party circle of politics, mm-hmm. I expect them to be held to hold themselves to that standard. So I expect this from Democrats. I know Republicans have it in them to be like that. I just don't expect it. So when I say I'm disappointed in this person, that person, it's because it's like Kevin Faulkner. I got so angry because I'm like, you're lying about the homeless situation. You bust them out of your city limits and then you're claiming you solved it for San Diego. No, that's not true. So yes, I do. I expect this, but for the politicians I want to support, I want them to be more like me. So when I saw all of this from Carl and I started learning about it, I started doing the 50th, I was crushed because I'm like, Carl's a fighter, Carl's this. And then I saw this, but I also accept people and I put myself in certain positions. Like it bumps me out because Carl's willing to help with this lithium battle. But what's going to happen now? Because Carl holds grudges. What's going to happen now when he sees me talking like this? So, and because of Amy, I'm talking like this. This to me crossed the line, and I would respond to you, Annette. This is why I love you to death. It's your naivety. I love that. You're like pure in that sense. You're pure in that sense, but it's a naivety. What I say is true in that sense. You know, but because to me, it's like you shouldn't be disappointed in me because it's not what I'm telling you what I believe. It's what I see in the world and how it works, and it's ugly.
Look at what Amy just said, though. Amy, I want to come work with you for the heart and soul of the Republican Party because, William, but you're right, maybe, and maybe I am naive at times, but I mean, I have life experience. I know, but I'm.
So I don't mean it in a bad way like that.
I believe in people because I meet people like G and I meet people like Amy who don't let me down, but there is never, sorry, lying is unacceptable. If someone is going to lie to you on the little things, they're going to lie to you on the big things. So why would you ever trust that he could do anything with the lithium battery situation? I'm sorry. Once someone is a proven liar, they don't – I just read something today. No, it was like a Chinese – no, it was a Chinese proverb. And it said something like a piece of leather, no matter what you do to it or whatever, you tie it up, you put it through whatever, it's still going to be a piece of leather at the end. These things don't change. So there are certain things I'm starting to believe or certain characteristics in people, unless there was some sort of internal revelation, you know, a come to Jesus moment, that is probably true of his characteristic and will probably maintain and be the same as someone who really cannot be trusted. So, yeah, I mean, he's not going to help. I mean, it's just like that's air. That's just, those are just words. There's nothing behind it because he has proven himself to be a dishonest man.
So to answer your question, one of the biggest issues I have is with conservatives and how they treat fundamentalists when it comes to the pro-life conversation. They flat out lie. Mm-hmm. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. And they don't.
Right.
That includes some of the ones we've talked about. So yeah. I view it as they all lie. It's what can I – so right now I'm representing a group that needs something. If this person can help, I'll take it because I, you know, for me, I'm 57. I'm closer to death. I don't view it as it's for me. It's these kids, you know, the Escondido, the toxic fumes with the lithium fire there in Otay Mesa here in Valley Center. So if whatever politician can come and help and get that message out in that battle, I'll take it even if it's a sliver because I'm a marketer and I can use that. That's what I'm good at. So, and the reason I say that, that's one example. Then I get infuriated because I believe there's a way to fight and win back the abortion battle. But our side isn't doing anything. They run from that battle and then they tell you what you want to hear. So to answer your question, our side lies as much as the other side. For this call to my lie, it's at an exponentially worse level, but the people who you support, they're lying in certain ways too. My point to you is that none of them are saints, except for Amy. And the reason I say that is because I wanted her to come on this show for a reason. Because when I saw what you did, Amy, it galvanized me. We got to do the show. The reality is I should have stayed away from this. It galvanized me because I'm like, maybe there's a figure right there who can galvanize others, who's not going to cave in, who's going to become the heart and soul of the party. And you know what? I see it in your timeline. I did not know that. I unsubscribed from him. I stopped giving money to him. I stopped doing that. All it takes is one, and that person talks to another. And like I said, the Republican, maybe this is a step to our local party winning the party back, because our party's gone down the toilet. How do I know? Because what G said, we were raising money like there was nothing. We
Can
were
I speak
well
to that? Can I give you some inside baseball that's going to blow your mind about that?
Put it in terms that the audience can understand, though.
Yes. So Carl DeMille got elected to Republican Central Committee. So he was an elected Central Committee member, somebody who actually was, it was his role, he was supposed to help the Republican Party. So what he did was he maneuvered his way in and he said, I think Reform California should be the activist wing of the Republican Party. So right. Yeah. He got the Republican Party to hand over the donor list to him, the email list to him, the volunteer list.
But Amy,
stripped the Republican Party. Now, I'm not saying that these things were done willingly. Stripped the Republican Party of all of its wealth, all the while promising like a snake that he was doing it to help him, but he was helping himself. Meanwhile, he's going on the radio saying, oh, the Republican Party is such a mess. Carl, you're an elected Central Committee member with a radio show. Like, you are the Republican Party right now. And by the way, you have control of all the assets of the Republican Party. Then on his last radio show, before he signed off because he can't have a radio show and run for office, he went on this huge rant and he was bragging that he was going to buy the San Diego Republican Party for pennies on the dollar.
I will push back in this sense. They gave him that list willingly. That's my whole issue with Tony Kovarik and Paula Witzel. They weren't, nobody had a gun in their head. They chose to align themselves with him. So I did hear that story.
Trusted the wrong person.
Like I said, that's what happens when you sleep with the devil. And you got to be careful who you align. That's why I'm torn, because he can help me.
I will help you with the lithium battery issue. He hasn't helped us. I have a proposed lithium battery.
Well, he's running in our district right now. That's why he's willing. Hold on, Amy, real quick. You're the one who exposed this, correct?
Yes.
And so give us, and to the audience, this image we're looking at, Carl was saying, no, that's not me, that's not us, Amy. And this is fighting with Democrat tactics, but with the truth. Because the average person wouldn't have done what you did, Amy. Dig it out and present it. And that's the righteousness I'm talking about. So tell me about this, the story of how you got found this out and how this came about, finding this, because you had to put it upon yourself. I'm going to dig this information out. Tell us about that.
I can't take credit for this. This actually was found out by Scott Lewis from The Voice of San Diego. He did an article about this and he posted. And then what I did as an investigator, because I never take anything at face value, I went ahead and searched FPPC records too, and I found exactly what you're seeing here on the screen. And so, yes, this image is mine, and I did post it to Twitter, but I got to hand it to Scott Lewis for the reporting on this, because he's the one that found it.
Oh, and thank you for saying that, because I have in my notes, hat tip to Voice of San Diego. A lot of this information came through them. I always get the feeling they are a leftist outlet, but you give credit to where credit is due regardless. Voice of San Diego is, and I think the Times of San Diego piggybacked off the Voice of San Diego, but the Voice of San Diego was on top of this. In fact, I sent the crew here a podcast where they talked about it, and that kind of led me to gathering more information. So let's get down. Let me remove this. So let's talk about the ramifications of what has happened here, and that includes what you've done, and that is you've galvanized people to the tune of, and I don't know, maybe this was happening already, but there was a $300,000 or $350,000 donation by the firefighters to the Republican Party. There was a $50,000 donation from DoorDash in my understanding, and quote me, is that this may have had something to do with that. Nothing?
No. So the firefighters have their own pack that they're running.
DoorDash, you're right. Yes.
DoorDash donated to the firefighters pack. The firefighters did not donate to the Republican Party. DoorDash did not donate to the Republican Party. It's a total separate pack that they're running.
Damn you, Voice of San Diego. Damn you. I'm kidding. Okay, but the point is actually there is no point. My question is, we talked about the police department. What people don't realize, they won their battle when Carl was on city council. They kept their pensions. It was the firefighters who lost theirs. And through legal issues, they won it back. So I would assume that $350,000 is because there's no love for Carl also. So some ugly truths. Here's a quote that Carl said. For the past several months, the San Diego GOP, SDGOP, has continued to make a series of embarrassing mistakes, failing to recruit candidates and forfeiting seats, putting incorrect information out repeatedly, sending triplicate mailings to donors, causing them to question the waste, etc. DeMille wrote. Before y'all kill me, this is true. This was my issue from 2015 that I saw, not just in our local Republican Party, but in all parties. And I saw that firsthand. And I've told this story before. When I got elected to the planning group here in Valley Center, there were some open seats. I reached out to the Central Committee. Amy, you can verify this because I know it's true. Part of the job of the Central Committee is also to recruit for seats. Yes. For that is what, that's a job they never do. They never, ever, and it drives me up. I get so angry. Being naive, getting elected, I emailed the Republican Party, hey, or the Central Committee members, because I knew them. I had met them. Not a response, not one freaking response. So I emailed the party, hey, we have some open seats. Nobody on Central Committee. Can y'all pass a message or have some work? The chair emailed me back, can you be our eyes and voice out there? I'm like, what the hell? I emailed him back. That's a Central Committee's job. I can't count on them. So when I see this, I'm like, that's why in my notes, an ugly truth. Failing to recruit candidates and forfeiting seats. We owned, I don't want to say that's a terrible word, but we controlled the Board of Supervisors for over 20 years. They saw this shifting demographic change and they did absolutely nothing. So when I say I get mad at the Republican Party, these are the reasons why. I believe this is how Carl was able to build the grassroots. Like I said, wrong or right in the method he used.
Schtick. I saw an ad for his congressional campaign. He frames himself as the outsider, right? Fighting against like the swamp of the Republican Party. Meanwhile, he was a sitting Central Committee member. Right, with enormous influence over the party, because remember, he had control of all the assets. So he is as much responsible as a Central Committee member elected to recruit candidates. So he's criticizing himself. And by the way,
you're right.
When I
you're
ran
right.
against, let me just say this, I ran against Nathan Fletcher in 2022, right? 2 days before the filing date ended, Carl DeMille inserted a Democrat to run, Sadika Hooker. He then fundraised off something called Defeat Nathan Fletcher. He raised an exorbitant amount of money and he did mailers for her. The Democrat did nothing to support me in that race, right? And then when I made the top two in the primary, I got zero support from him. But he's the one that raised money for the Defeat Nathan Fletcher PAC. So I'm just going to ask it openly. What'd you do with that money, Carl? And why were you supporting a Democrat?
I think you guys are misunderstanding me. I'm laying it out in terms of the situation that Carl took advantage
and
of.
And I'm talking about an elected central committee member who was engaging in those tactics while also simultaneously criticizing. There's plenty of mistakes Reform California has done, too. In fact,
today I got two emails, one saying
they don't have enough money for the Reform California voter guide, and then another email claiming that Carl DeMaio has $1.5 million cash on hand for his assembly race. So which one is it, Carl, of Reform California? Are you broke or do you have tons of cash on hand? So just what I'm trying to say is question the source. This is the guy that is spewing all these things to cause division and strife. I mean, I'm just going to tell you, people make mistakes. People are not perfect. Carl is the one who chose to take those mistakes and make them public. While he was a sitting central committee.
Amy, I'm living this nightmare. Thank you for but this is the divide and conquer. It's working. How do you stop someone like this?
Amy, I have to respond to you, not to argue with you as much as you guys just do not understand. No, don't be sorry. It's fine. This is a show for all four of us. It's just turning out me and Amy are doing a lot of stuff.
No, I mean, I just think back, and I forgot what year it was, but Phil Graham is running for assembly. I forgot what the number was, but it was taken over for Rocky Chavez, right? Remember
like
that, 2010, right?
20, yeah, like 2010, right around there.
2014, maybe. I don't remember exactly. But Tony Crivara kept saying, we need to work as a team. All the other Republicans need to drop out when the party endorses someone because we're already at a disadvantage by virtue of being in California. The other Republicans didn't drop out. In fact, one of the Republicans did a hit piece, a lie against Phil Graham, about the bar thing, remember that? And the woman and all that turned out to be a complete lie. And in the primary, two Democrats won the top two because of that story, because of that lie. And now we can't get that seat back. It's just permanently in the Democrats' hands. So we got the circling, what did they call it? The circular firing squad. And it's like, okay, so where is the victory here?
Yeah.
So I have to question these tactics that Amy's talking about. Is why are we fighting for the Democrat to win against Nathan Fletcher and not the Republican?
No, you're right, G. I'm in absolute agreement. What you guys are failing to realize is, look, it was Tony Kovarik and Paula Witzel that were in bed with Carl. They gave him that donor list. They're the ones who helped Carl take power. They were the issues are brought up in terms of the recruiting of candidates.
But let's just say that's a mistake. We don't know that was, they knew.
It doesn't matter if it's a mistake or not. It happened. It should never have happened. I come from the military train of thought. The commanding officer is ultimately responsible. At the end of the day, the county chair of the San Diego Republican Party is ultimately responsible for the success and the woes of the party. Fair or not, that's how it works. This party's problems in this state began in the late 1990s after Prop 187 that constituents voted for that the California Supreme Court overturned. The Republicans never recovered. Our party began acquiescing to the state's wishes. What I'm trying to tell y'all is, and I'm not defending Carl, what happened is he took advantage of the Republican Party when they were reeling. But at the end of the day, leadership in our local San Diego Republican Party is ultimately the responsible parent that has sat there and said, as a parent, here's the right decision. Because the constituents out there, they don't care about the weeds. They're working their jobs. So they're counting on the Republican Party to guide them. So with Carl having control of the party, with Carl having the voter list, the donor list, etc., he is a Democrat, or he is a Republican who fought like a Democrat, as we saw. I'm not defending them. What I'm trying to say is he took advantage of it. Now, that said, I believe that. My hope, again, is Corey and Amy, what they have done. And mm-hmm. what we have to do now is galvanize around them. And Carl's a fighter. He fights dirty. Andrew Hayes' campaign should have known. It's a disgrace how that primary went down. It's a disgrace of those door hangers. And Amy, life's not fair. You may be working, but that's the battle. It's like David versus Goliath that he has to take. So I'm just telling you, this is why it happened. Now we have to galvanize around you two. Go ahead.
Okay, I just have to tell you some more inside baseball. So as we know, in Assembly District 75, right, Andrew Hayes was the endorsed candidate. And then right. just a couple days before the filing, that's when Carl DeMille filed.
One day before filing.
Okay, but here's the thing. There was also another Republican running named Jack Fernandez. And Carl was fighting like hell for everybody to get behind Jack Fernandez. Remember that?
Oh, no. I learned a lot about Jack Fernandez. I'm with you. Okay. I know where you're going.
Yes. So, meanwhile, if you look, Carl DeMille had a central committee account. Anybody who's listening, you're like, what is Amy even talking about? I don't know what a central committee account is. When somebody wants to run for central committee of the Republican Party, that's an elected position. So you can raise money in a committee. So by June of last year, if you look at the Fair Political Practices reporting, you can see that Carl DeMille had raised nearly $200,000 into his central committee account. You don't need $200,000 to run for central committee, especially if you're Carl DeMille with that kind of name recognition, right? Well, we also know that Carl DeMille has used an address to file to be in AD 75, which is not the residence that he owns with his married partner, right? But this address in AD 75 is associated with an Airbnb. So what Carl is claiming is that he is renting a room. And that gives him claim to run in AD 75. So all I'm trying to say is he planned it. He methodically planned it. He was raising money into his central committee account. He was raising money into Reform California, which he then transferred into his assembly race. And then when he ran in the primary, I know you keep saying he had 43% of the vote. The dirty tricks that took place in that primary would just, people would be, they would not even believe. Carl DeMille actually spent money on the Democratic candidate. He was sending mailers to Democrats to prop up the Democrat who wasn't even running. Somebody even told me a rumor that Carl DeMille built this guy a decent website because the guy's actual website sucked so bad, right? So I don't know if that 43% of the vote, 42, whatever got Carl got, was actually Republicans. So when somebody says, well, you know, he deserves to have the Republican endorsement because he got 43% of the vote, I have no idea of that 43%.
Oh, no, Amy, I disagree. He doesn't deserve to have it. No. They endorsed. See, that was my issue. They endorsed Andrew. And I'm like, I don't care how you won. They endorsed Andrew. You keep – it's about honor and integrity. And that doesn't exist in politics. So it drives me up a wall.
Politics is a blood sport, but you can. You can have integrity. No, you can. I believe it is possible.
Okay. I have to say this. We want it and you can have it, but it's not there. It hasn't been there. In 2000, with the Gore Bush battle, once the media flipped and came out of the closet, for lack of a better way, everything changed. We want it and theoretically we can have it, but it's not there anymore. So that's what I'm trying to tell you guys. I agree with you. Those are probably a lot of Democrat votes. And Andrew, I don't care how big DeMille's victory was. The Republican Party endorsed him. What I'm trying to tell you guys is, so what? And I don't mean that on a personal or on a mean basis. I'm like saying it from the perspective, so what? At the end of the day, he got 43%. So what? At the end of the day, Trump lost in 2020. No matter what the shenanigans were, the result is not what we wanted. So my take is, we got to fight back. How do we fight back? Again, I keep going to what you and Corey did. That's step one. What I'm trying to say is we as a party, we as candidates, we as politicians, and forgive me, we need to stop whining, toughen up and go, we're going to fight harder. We're going to win. And that's why I'm disappointed in Andrew Hayes' campaign. I'm like, you got to buckle up and find a different way to get your message to the constituents, or he's going to roll over you. So it's not that I disagree with everything any of y'all have said. It's the reality of it is, come at the end of that election night, you know, who's the winner, who's the loser? Because they're the ones who are going to set policy. You know, so that's my whole belief. And I hate to say it like that because I sound like a
person. And I hear you. And look, I have risked a tremendous amount by speaking out and even being here. I guarantee you that one of Carl's hired people at Reform California is either watching right now or will be watching later, right? And so, but
yeah, I told you guys.
I just tell you, it's liberating to not feel like you're being controlled by another human being and to speak the truth and being willing to accept the consequences. And I feel that when I look at the two people in that race, Andrew Hayes and Carl DeMille, I believe that Andrew is going to be the one that would be more successful in Sacramento. I said this about Nathan Fletcher. I told people months before he imploded, I said, you watch. Nathan Fletcher will implode publicly and spectacularly. And it happened. And I just feel people like Nathan Fletcher, like Bob Filner, like Carl DeMaio, they fall into the own traps that they set for other people. And they eventually just, implode. I'm calling it right now. Carl DeMaio will spectacularly implode publicly.
Well, no, I agree. I think I'll say this comment and then we'll go to our final words. But it's like P. Diddy, what they're talking about with or Diddy now, the God complex. They think that they can get away with anything. They think that they're above it. But more importantly, they can get away with it. And when I keep saying, you heard me a lot say tonight, he stepped, put his foot in it. Their arrogance eventually dooms him. I think those races he lost, it was his arrogance with missteps along the way. Maybe the Scott Peterson race, he didn't really have a shot, but the mayor's race, it was his arrogance. And I think what happened with him, that he wasn't counting on you standing up, Amy. He could have probably handled Corey in his eyes, but the moment you stood up, I think he stepped in it. The arrogance. And I think what happened, what you have done, could be the beginning of his downfall. It's given Andrew Hayes a lifeline. And Andrew, if he wants any chance of winning, he better take advantage of it. Because I'm sorry, y'all may disagree with me. Had what happened not happened, Carl would have run away with this. As a constituent in his district, I was seeing that firsthand. You know? So real quick, G and then Annette, where can we find you? And Amy, I want to give you the last word of where they can find you and anything you want to pump up. So, G.
Yeah. So, right here, let me move my finger correct. So, I'm on X at RSFG, and my last word is, this is just rhyming what happened in 2012 with Nathan Fletcher, right? The party endorsement went to Carl DeMaio. Nathan Fletcher said, screw this, I'm really an independent. And then 6 months later or a year later, he was a Democrat. And I remember, Amy, your prediction about Nathan. And I'm like, I have a feeling too, because I've had some conversations with him, and wow, that was a downfall. So, your prediction was correct then.
Miss Annette.
Annette Ross. At Annette, the little slash Ross vibe, but I'm not on Twitter that much, honestly. But I mean, it's like Shakespearean, right? People and the human tragedy. Like, we can be our own worst enemies, and a lot of people like this who have these tragic flaws end up self-imploding. Is ain't you right? It's like great literature. I mean, and Amy just called it. I'm on Team Amy, though, William. I have to believe that we're going to head to a better place and we're going to, like, go for something higher in politics. We're going to, you know what I'm saying? Like, we have to go there and take the high road and have integrity and then take these battles on and then go to the next one. And like you said, you say it though, it's the truth. and the truth prevails. It takes sometimes a long time to get there, but it does prevail in the end.
See, what you said is frustrating to me because I like the layout. This is the reality of what's happening, but it's always misinterpreted as if I'm taking a side. I'm on Team Amy here, but I like to lay it out. This is why we got here. This is how we got here. But now we have a lifeline that's been given to us. Now it's up to us to take advantage of it. Amy, not to toot my own horn, but from the military standpoint, I knew Nathan Fletcher was going down. Because as a military guy, I've seen it over and over and over. There's certain guys, you just can't keep it in your pants. And from there, when I was told at a military ball from she was a beautiful woman at the time. She was involved I'm not going to say her name, but she was involved in the party. She said she was at a ball. Nathan Fletcher is next to her because he was a Republican at the time with his wife. And she said she felt violated just the way his eyes were gazing at her and undressing her. And she goes, I had never been more disgusted. And I'm like, let me look away here. Let me look away, you know. But, he's one of those guys. And us military guys, we recognized it immediately. So, anyway, you get the last word, whatever you want to talk about. But more importantly, where they can find you. In fact, let me put up your Amy Fletcher.
Well, speaking of Nathan Fletcher, just to kind of close this out and bring it full circle, I filed an FPPC complaint against Nathan Fletcher because he has been using campaign donor money to pay for his lawsuit defending him against sexual assault and sexual harassment. And guess what? This week, the FPPC accepted that complaint, and they are now actively investigating Nathan Fletcher. So I actually put that on my socials a few months ago, letting people know that I had filed that FPPC complaint. And if you're watching and you want to see me drop it like it's hot every single day, go to Amy FOR San Diego. I have 11,000 followers on X, and I just talk about San Diego. And on Instagram, I've got 36,000 followers. Go to Amy FOR San Diego.
And for the audience, the FPPC is our governing body here in California where shenanigans can get reported and they get investigated. And sometimes it results in big fines. The sad thing about it, sometimes it takes years, you know, for that to happen. So for the rest of the audience, this has been fired up. This has been a very, very fired up episode.
Yes,
do not forget to share and like. Oh, and Amy, thank you for validating. I told the team here, they're going to be watching this show, both the Republican Party leadership and Carl DeMaio's people. So it's a very important show, and you help make it happen. So everybody else, make sure you share, you like, and most importantly, you subscribe to this. You can find this podcast as well as our other podcasts at grumblingsmedia.com. You can find us at our social media outlets, including Rumble, YouTube, Spotify, Pandora, and Apple. And the profile handle, Grumblings Media. This is Fired Up. I am William Del Pilar, and I bid you adieu.